and decisions taken around just substantially legal issues handled by the Speaker's office in consultation with Frank, who acted on behalf of the Speaker's office and the committees concerned. So we'll hand over to Frank for now, and then the chairpersons will make their preliminary remarks. Then I have a parched throat. I apologize for that. Welcome to everybody. Over to you, Frank.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just prepared a short presentation. It'll just be 5 minutes. Just to set the context for today's hearing, first of all, the committee or the four committees or any committee of the House is acting on behalf of the House. And that's also in the issue of this, why in the issue of the summons there's concurrence and cooperation between the House being represented by the Office of the Speaker and then the four committees. So when we're looking at today's proceedings, we basically have the committees, the National Assembly, it's in the top one to show the linkage there. They have the right to summons anybody in terms of the Constitution, of course, to fulfill their oversight functions or legislative functions, which is the mandate given by the Constitution, and that's what I put up there. So the direct link for oversight, to maintain oversight or to hold accountable, would be to, in terms of today's proceedings, the JSE, the Companies Intellectual Property Commission, the FSB, or what they're known now as the Market Conduct Authority, actually, I got that wrong, and the IRB, the Independent Regulatory Board for Auditors, and the Hawks. So those are the public bodies, the organs of state, that's accountable to Parliament or to the National Assembly, in which the committees must fulfill those functions. So when it comes to a private sector witness, of course, the committee may legitimately inquire into the cause, the nature, or the consequences of Steinhoff's collapse to get to the issue whether there was a lack of performance by one of the regulatory bodies, that's in terms of the oversight, or whether there's a gap in the regulatory framework that might need some exercise of its legislative powers. And to that, they can summon anybody to appear before it. In terms of the protection of witnesses, we're looking at the Powers and Privileges Act, the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament Act. Witnesses today have the same protection they would have in a high court, but it goes further. Of course, the issue of self-incrimination cannot be raised, but the witness here will have protection against self-incrimination, and they will be put under oath. And the oath is simply by advising a witness, and I'll deal with that in the last slide. The wording comes straight out of NA Rule 168. Chairperson, the scope of the questions, as I understand it, legal professional privilege will prevent or will be a reason for a witness to say, look, that I have protection by the law. So anything that protects the witness or disallows a witness to answer a question, that can be raised. Of course, members have freedom of speech and can ask basically anything, but the mandate of the specific committees, the lawfulness of those questions, goes to Section 17 in the Powers and Privileges Act, which says that the witness must answer any question legitimately put to him or her. The self-incrimination issue I've dealt with. Just in conclusion, Chair, the scope of the inquiry is determined by the constitutional mandate, and the members cannot actually inquire about civil and criminal culpability into witnesses. That's, of course, something that falls outside the mandate of Parliament, that goes to the judiciary. Chairperson, it's not very big because it's such a lot, but there is NA Rule 168, privilege of witnesses. So it says, prior to a witness giving evidence before a House or committee, the chairperson must, in accordance with Section 16 of the Powers and Privileges Act, inform a witness as follows, and then Chair, I don't know if you want me to read the whole thing, but that is what the witness must be informed of. And maybe I should read it, Chair, then it's read. And then, so please be informed that by law, yeah, you are required
to... One second. Can we, instead of getting too technical, just meet the requirements of the law in this way, that the advocate Frank Jenkins is now going to read to all the witnesses what the rule says, and we take it that you can ask any questions after that. Is that right? Right. So can you just read the rule, and then members can ask questions or whatever they want to before we get issues of clarity from the witnesses concerned?
No, thank you, Chair. And that will put the witness under oath, and you'll get the protection by that. We don't hand out books and hands. And So please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that the evidence given under oath or affirmation before a House or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Thank you, Chair.
So let's deal with this last issue first, because it's a legal issue. Do members want any clarity on the protection of witnesses and their rights before a normal routine oversight meeting? Is that right? Okay. Any comments about that from members? No. Okay. The witnesses who are here, can we take it that Steinhoff is here? Sorry, yeah. You want to raise an issue?
Why are we going through this exercise? Like, what is the purpose of this? Like, because we're members of parliament here. We've got rules of the National Assembly that guide us, and we know what we're busy with. We're not arriving here for the first time today because there are some people from Steinhoff who are accused of corruption and fraud. Yeah. Why are we being told to tiptoe around all these issues? Why can't we be allowed to do whatever we do every time? We've been dealing with these issues for a very long time now. Yeah. Why should we be told, don't say this, don't do that, don't do that? Why are we being treated like that?
Okay, this is not about the members.
And I honestly, I don't know, like, and every time we question you about your over-reliance on that lawyer who misguides you on many things. So please, can we please continue the meeting on the agenda as is here, so that we do not get to be dealing with the things in the manner, in a reckless manner in which you are making us to deal with these issues. Let us ask questions that we have to ask, and then we'll proceed from there.
Right. Tony?
Chair, it's very important for members to attend all the meetings, because you see, when you skip meetings, that's where your mind is in a lull. And that's the disadvantage of Honorable Shibambo, who always skips certain meetings, and he misses out on procedure. Now, let's remind Honorable Shibambo the procedure of Parliament. When a witness appears in front of Parliament, we read to them Rule 168. In the NA rules. That's the rule that Advocate Jenkins has just read out to the witnesses. Probably it's very important that also Honorable Shibambo familiarize himself with the resolution and the subpoena. Then he will understand why you have gone through the process that you've gone. Well, I know we're going to be very excited because we've got media today. So we'll always remind members as and when they get excited about procedure. We are governed by the rules of the National Assembly. And for me to clarify him, if a witness, and I'm trying to interpret the rule that Advocate Jenkins has already presented unto us here, because it's very important for us to read out Rule 168 to any witness that appear before us to understand the difference between evidence given under oath and the legal and implications of any evidence that will lead to incrimination, so that they understand as and when they make the presentation that some of the information that they might present unto us might incriminate them in a court of law. So those are basic rules. So it's fine if members get excited. We'll bring them online for them to understand the national rules, the National Assembly rules, better, I think.
Chairperson, it was a point of order, but it was a substantive input. Let us read 168 rule. It says, prior to a witness giving evidence before a House, the chairperson must, in accordance with Section 16 of the Powers and Privileges Act, read this following pledge. That is not a chairperson of the committee. Yes. While being abused, put some warped legal advices that are going to misguide this process, which made you to be challenged in court with this process.
Chair, order.
Why can't you then can you please be patient?
Point of order, Chair. Chair, I've raised it before and I'm not going to tolerate it. This issue between Honorable Shibambo and Advocate
Jenkins. But I'm busy making an
impact. We are not going to allow him to delegitimize a lawyer that belongs to Parliament because he personally has a problem with him. So it's within your rights to call a lawyer of Parliament to explain any rule. You are within the rules to do that.
Chair, I want to persuade you to chair the meeting. See, don't invite committees to come and listen to finance squabbling here. That's not what it is. That you're, if this is what you are inviting us for, then you'd rather
move on. Look, basically, I would like to propose to the committee that instead of me reading out the requirement, because the issue is being challenged in the court of law, the reason we're doing this obviously is because there are court challenges that might emerge between now and next week. And we've been advised by the Speaker's office, it's not Mr. Frank Jenkins acting on his own or merely at the behest of the committee. They have consulted lawyers beyond Mr. Frank Jenkins. In fact, Mr. Frank Jenkins, to be fair, is just acting on behalf of a team of lawyers. They've advised us that in this particular instance, to manage the legal challenges that might ensue, and some which already ensue and have implications for today's meeting and next week, Wednesday, we should follow the procedure as required by Parliament's rules. Now, if any member is unhappy with those rules, they must deal with it in the Rules Committee. For now, I'm asking this committee whether it's okay that we read it, rather than going through it with every witness, we read it at the beginning and give any witness who's here a chance to question anything. So can you read? You've read it, right? Now, is there any person who, I'll come back to you, Mr. Shibambo, any witness who has any questions around that, who's here? Any questions? No. Right, that's finished. That's a procedure. We've done with it. If you want me to formally read it, I will read it. Bring it to
you. Sir.
Yeah. Let me finish my work as a chair, and then you have also forced to abide by the rules and laws of Parliament. I'm doing my job. Doesn't matter which chair does it, but I will do it. Right, so I'm reading it out as the chair now, right? All witnesses, please note the following. Please be informed that by law, you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a House or committee, which may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Any questions from the witnesses? No. Right, thank you. Can I suggest, before we hand over to anybody else, let me move on now. The parameters have been set out by the law. The lawyers will deal with these matters, and that we can exercise our oversight in terms of the law and the rules of Parliament. And if we're unhappy with the parameters within which we're required to carry out our oversight, then we must actually change the rules and the laws concerned. For now, the chairs here are required to abide by the law, the laws that we pass and the rules that we adopt. Right, can we move on then? Thank you. We'll note that, that EFF is very unhappy. We did convene a meeting to report to you in the interest of openness and transparency at 9:15. We required all the opposition parties, we asked them to be there. Unfortunately, we only sent out the notice late yesterday after the chairs met at lunchtime and decided we should brief the various political party heads in the four committees on some of the aspects of the legal process, which we dealt with from 9:15 to 10 o'clock. Not everybody was there, but we can give those who are not there an overview after this meeting. Broadly speaking, what emerged from that meeting is that there's a request from the DA, and it's a legitimate one, that consideration be given by the Speaker of Parliament to releasing the senior counsel opinion, and we're going to explore that. At this stage, I gather the Speaker's office lawyers suggest that because there may be legal challenges around the issues of subpoenaing people here, that we leave it for now because it's not wise to release it publicly, but we don't see any reason why
that can't be released as soon as the legal challenges fall away. That's one. Two is there's some unhappiness about the parameters within which Mr. Eustace is being called next Wednesday. We're dealing with that. We think we reached largely agreement on how to proceed, and I will share that with the committee next Wednesday after further discussions with other parties. Beyond that, there's nothing further for me to say except to hand over to Steinhoff. Over to you. Mr. Ben LaFrancia, you're here, presumably. Yes. So the procedure I would suggest is, as we've done before, we have like a 10-minute overview. In Steinhoff's case, we've asked them, and you've got a report from Raquel Schlope and Antonio Manemera. It's about 7 pages. It sets out the sort of like broad approach of the committee today, but members are free to ask questions. Our understanding is that you're required to comment on where things are since the last meeting we had with you. At the request of yourselves and others, you wanted a meeting held not in June, but later, because the PwC was going to present its interim report sometime, I think, in late June or whatever. And so perhaps you can tell us where that is and where things are. Have you pursued the matter with the Hawks and so on? But before I ask you to say anything, perhaps I should ask Temba if he wants to say something. And we're looking for Wilma. Where is he? She's supposed to be here. Yeah, Wilma, can you please sit here? You're the co-chair. Sorry, do you want to say anything?
Yeah, thank you, Comrade Chair. Comrades, good morning. I think you have sort of given context, because I think it is always important to emphasize context, that our engagement today is the third meeting with or on Steinhoff, primarily because we had asserted that as Parliament, as representatives of the people, we cannot be spectators to a situation that has such huge and grave implications to the country and affects so many people, especially if you look at the PIC, which is one of the biggest institutional investors in Steinhoff. So I think for us to say Parliament remains seized and interested, we're offering the parties a platform to talk to the nation, to talk to the people, clarify issues, give context, so that there can be better understanding and a sense of what it is that we're doing to try and manage this crisis and ensure that things are put back in much more stabler, predictable and reliable basis. So I just felt as Steinhoff makes its inputs and the other bodies do the same, that context must never be lost, so that whatever engagement is had, whether it's Mr. LaFrancia or it's Juoste or whoever, there has to be that basic understanding that this is a platform to assist in clarifying issues so that everybody has a better understanding. I don't think it's a passion session of any sort. We just want clarity so that we can all move together with a better and a common understanding. I think that's what I would want to put for the corporate.
Okay, so it's okay, 10 to 15 minutes from each of you, and then a series of questions for members for about an hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd rather sit here because it's difficult for my baggage and the sign language interpreter to move there, so please can you allow me to sit here, but thanks anyway. I'm just on behalf of the Committee of Public Service Administration, Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. And my committee's biggest concern is that our public servants pension fund is invested by the PIC in Steinhoff. And, you know, we have a big concern. We need to make sure that the public service pension fund is safe and that there's no impact or effect on the fund, and our workers are also watching this, and they are also concerned about their pension fund and the future of their money. So that's our biggest concern. I thank you.
Just to explain that Daniel Machila has tendered an apology. They had a pre-planned workshop for today, which is a major workshop with all their senior managers, but they have sent a representative or two here. I think there's two of them here, and then the GUPF is also represented here. They come to all meetings, the senior managers of PIC and GUPF, but both of them today, there's very legitimate reasons, but they've sent people who are reporting to them, and they asked me to apologize sincerely for their absence. Right, over to you, Heather, and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just in opening, we completely understand what has been said. We understand what the impetus is behind us being here, that there is a matter of significant public interest. We also understand the exposure of pension funds to the share, to the Steinhoff share, so we understand the gravity of it, and we understand why it is a matter of such great public interest, and we come here voluntarily because of that understanding. We have prepared a short presentation. We trust, I've heard what the understanding of the various chairs are in terms of what you would like covered, and I think it is covered through the presentation, so we'll go through that process. Firstly, just to acknowledge the chairs of the portfolio committees, the honourable members of parliament, the various regulators, members of the media, and ladies and gentlemen. We do thank you for inviting us here for an update. We are willing, as we've stated before, and we welcome the platform. We did attend on your invitation in late January to give the first of our updates as to where we are. We were invited back around April. We unfortunately could not attend at that time. It was the time of our AGM, where many of our members that had been elected according to the Dutch code, they serve under an NDA until a general meeting. So many of the members had to be voted in by shareholders at that annual general meeting, so we therefore had to attend that. PwC was in this meeting and did give feedback, I understand, from where that process is. So despite the fact that we have released about 75 SENS announcements since December and tried to keep the market informed, we do realize that this is a public platform and it provides us an opportunity to give some feedback to the public generally with regards to where we are and acknowledging also the public interest and concern. We'd like to start by just restating or reminding this group of our commitment, which starts with an awareness of the impact that the current events at Steinhoff has had, the current events have had on stakeholders, including the investments and the exposure of pension funds. It has also exposed the reputation of the company, its businesses, as well as the impact on South Africa, on the nation. We restate our commitment to work to uncover the truth, to rectify any wrongdoings, and to communicate as fully as we can on an ongoing basis. We can restate our commitment that we have worked and cooperated with all our regulators, and we are committed to continue to do so. We have been through a massive exercise of working to restructure the group's international debt, and there have been various announcements that have been made to the market in this regard. The company now employs 120,000 people, 50,000 of whom are in South Africa, and some. The last time we reported to this grouping, it was 130,000 employees, but based on certain disposals and our no longer equity accounting for the POCO asset, we have reduced the number of people that we count in that number. That takes it to 120,000. But through this process, we can say that based on maintaining business continuity, those jobs have been secured. As you will recall, one of our key points in our meeting in January was to stabilize the situation. And stability remains a core objective of our processes. We also are committed and remain committed to finalizing the audited financial statements and to ensure that the investigations can proceed far enough, which will lead to legal and other steps that need to be taken by the company and the company intends to take based on the findings and outcomes of that process. again, we restate, given the gravity of the situation, that you will appreciate that the board remains legally and otherwise quite constrained by what we can communicate, and we are under the advice of the company's lawyers in this regard. There's a question.
Am I correct, you, Ederson?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Look, Chair, with due respect to her, do you understand the size of the problem this thing has created to South Africa?
Mm-hmm.
And the pace that you are explaining to us is the pace that you have explained to many people. Can we get a sense of when do you think we should find answers?
When we should find answers.
For this repetition recycling of ideas,
yes. Okay.
We have got used to it.
Yes.
And we have read about it.
I understand.
Tell us, what are you going to do?
Yes. Okay.
One result, consequences. If there's no result, then you close the meeting.
Okay. I can understand.
But you're recycling yourself now.
No, I do. I do understand that. I think the way we thought about addressing the presentation was to bring somehow what our commitment is going forward, some of the progress that is achieved to date, and we will get there. But I understand that that's your concern, but I don't know if it's the concern of the entire meeting. So we can jump to those parts of the presentation, or
Ms. Song, can I ask for some guidance from Themba and others? I think you've used up 5:58, right? It's almost 6 minutes. Dealing with issues that we know about. We don't
okay.
know about the fund. What we really want to know is, what have you done to
okay.
deal with the crisis? What have you done to pursue people that are emerging to be complicit in this?
Yeah.
When are you going to act against them? What have you done in respect of the hawks? When are we going to get results? I think that's
okay.
more or less what
okay.
we want to know.
Right.
But, Tandi, Tema, do you want to help? Is that fine?
Yes,
Tandi,
that's acceptable, Chair.
Chair, I wanted to know, are we at the point where asking questions? Is the presentation finished? Oh. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes. We'll give you another 10 minutes.
Okay.
But please focus on the issues that really
we
preoccupy us.
I understand.
And
so
you know what they are.
I
don't
know what they
what's
are.
What's in the media already.
Yes. Chair, I know what they are, but it's going to interrupt what I had prepared, so allow me to kind of go off my script a little bit and try and get to what the questions are. So I think in terms of how we've thought about the problem, and in terms of stability, there are a number of priorities that need to be pursued at the same time. So one of those priorities is with regards to the employment of people. So how do we achieve business continuity so that all businesses can run? We don't have to go into a liquidation and people can maintain their jobs. So that's been one definition of the problem and one application that we've had to. So I've just mentioned that as much as we, as the efforts that we've gone into to date, to a large extent, the crisis of a complete implosion of the company has been largely averted. That has been averted by the efforts to get to a standstill agreement with the banks. And many of the banks that were there originally are not the original banks. Some of the creditors and other debt holders have bought out the banks. So we've got an entirely new set of stakeholders on the creditor side currently. What the process has been for much of these months has been that the banks don't call an event of default and cause all of the companies to have a knock-on effect and go into insolvency. So that process was getting a very large group of people to agree to certain terms that would allow us to go into a stable and controlled decisions for what the company believes is good for the company. And that then leads into what is important for another group of stakeholders, and that's the shareholders. So the extent to which we can maintain business continuity and we can get through this process through the standstill with the banks, our hope and efforts are to maintain some form of core within the company that then we can have an opportunity and a possibility to
grow some shareholder value. So that's another stakeholder and another part of the crisis that had to be addressed. And I think the chair of the committee mentioned the importance of the shareholders and the exposure of pension funds to the share, and that's why that was part of the crisis and considered a priority for us. I think part of business continuity was also our customers, because in many parts of the world, customers pay deposits, they put their deposits down, and they hope that we will be able to go through a process to deliver the final product. So we've also had to maintain business continuity in that regard. The employees I've mentioned before. So in terms of the crisis, I think where we are at the moment is a standstill with the banks. We've been given 3 months to go through our restructuring process. They have given us 3 years until 2021 to, in a considered way, consider which go through our assets, decide which assets we will sell, how we will bring down the debt. A key consideration there is that the assets that remain have to be able to generate a cash flow so that we can service the remaining debt. So there's a massive exercise that the company will embark on. Tomorrow's our board meeting. Friday's our strategic session, where we will go through and say, now that we've achieved the lockup, what is the controlled way in which the company must act in order to achieve that outcome? So I think from a business continuity point of view, that addresses that. As far as whatever legal findings, so the PwC report is on track. I think that I have to state, because together with the PwC report and the audited financials which we have committed to the market, it is important for the JSE also that we deliver our audited results, because if we don't deliver our audited results, we stand the risk of the share being suspended. If the share is suspended, then shareholders are stuck in the share. There's no tradability. So for us, it's quite important that we maintain that that listed status. And in order to do that, we have to get to the audited financial results simultaneously. PwC and Deloitte have to work together, because Deloitte have to sign off on the audited financials ultimately, but they want the output of the PwC findings to be able to say whether the numbers that are being restated, PwC feels, have been investigated deeply enough to have a sign-off that's valid. So that process has to go on with them engaging with each other consistently towards our deadline for the 2017 results at the end of December this year, and the 2018 results, the current financial, at sometime in January. So all those things have to continue, and it's part of the crisis. The last matter with regards to PwC specifically. PwC, as I've just stated, their process is on track. The understanding and agreement with how that happens is that PwC goes through its process. As it has finding, it reports to the board. The board makes decisions about how that is released, so that there's some form of controlled process, and all findings are then handed over to the required authorities. That process has been followed. It continues to be followed. The last time we were here, we announced that a matter was raised with TECA. That matter is ongoing. It's a live investigation, and you will hear from various members here today as to how far those processes are on track. But I can confirm from a company's point of view that we remain engaged, we remain committed, we will uncover the wrongdoing, and we will take the steps that are required to follow those processes through. I'm just trying to see whether I've missed anything else. The other issue is also with regards to the South... Yeah, go on.
She was finishing, that's okay. Right. You know what the issues are. What's happening about your cooperation with the Hawks? What about job losses? What action are you taking against people which your PwC report suggests may be guilty? Are you handing that over to the hawks and so on?
Yes.
Can you finish all of those issues
yes.
and the members can come in?
Okay. Yeah. So I think I've said before that all issues are handed over to the relevant authorities. There is cooperation between the company and the hawks. There's also cooperation between PwC and the hawks. So to the extent that PwC can provide information, there is that cooperation is open between those two groups. The jobs, I think as far as South Africa goes, the company has paid down most of its African debt, which to a large extent secures what was quite important for this company, secures the South African, the SA Inc. and the Africa position. Job losses, the process with the hawks, the PwC report, all those matters are progressing, and we are progressing according to our committed deadlines. We have said when we will, PwC has said that they will complete the investigation by the end of this year, and our indications are that these processes are on track and underway.
We also asked you last time. Yes. And we recall you wanted a meeting later than June because you said the PwC will finish its interim or report, and we want to know, is there anything you can share with the committee without prejudicing the outcomes of the final auditing results with the committee? Is there anything you can share? What are the issues? In other words, are you acting against staff on which, what is a prima facie case? Have you handed people over apart from Mr. Euster? Those are the things we really want to know.
Sorry, Chair. No, I agree, but Chair, you are asking questions. You see, you must allow us to engage when it's in our interest. Look, I want clarity about.
And I'm asking about
how to
process are we
able to do it. Because quite what we hear that Toaster is not.
Can I just rule, please? Temba, help me. Wilma, can I just explain how the co-chairing is done? Each chair has the same status here, but because the Finance Committee takes ultimate responsibility for pensions issues, the regulators, and so on, in one case it's trade and industry, I coordinate. But you just press your button and intervene. There's no such thing as seeking permission, Wilma. Because you are there, it's difficult to know when you want to speak. Now, the chairs have to help. With due respect, Ms. Sun, you're not answering the precise questions that you know from two meetings have flowed. It's a lot of, can I put it gently, waffle, really. You're not helping. And we've just provided the legal parameters. We can actually ask you precise questions within the legal parameters, he said. So I think instead of you going on and on, I'm now suggesting, and since members are getting restless, let them ask the questions. Because, Ms. Son, you are too general. You're not helping. Am I correct, Temba? Good. Right. Wilma, you got any issue with that? Right. No, I've got to ask the co-chairs whether they agree. So we're all agreeing, Wilma? Good. Right. Now, Nyami, Mr. Shivambu, Mr. Mania, Tandi, David, Mr. Lees, anybody else? Right. Wilma, you want to say something?
Okay. So go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with you. I prefer her to finish with all what we've asked before, and then we will give an opportunity for members to ask questions.
Okay. Can you just quickly reply to questions you know from two previous meetings, with due respect, Ms. Son, that we asked you? You're not responding to them, really. You're not helping yourself. Or sign off, or anybody.
I'm not trying to frustrate the process at all, Chair. I'm trying just to stay within, to not jeopardize any other processes that the company is undergoing. So I'm trying to think carefully about how to do that.
No, Chair. That's not legal questions that are being asked. You need to be very careful how she responds. These are very well crafted questions that are not that will never lead to litigation. So,
okay, all right.
Yeah,
okay.
We can sort that out. Ms. Son,
yes.
Please, let's answer
yes.
precisely where you can't present the legal case for why you can't.
Okay.
We're not asking for names. We're saying, have
yes.
you taken action
we
against
have.
Any other person apart from Mr. Euster
yes.
based on your interim report of the auditors?
Chair.
Two, is there nothing you can share with us from the interim report that won't prejudice the ultimate outcome? And then there'll be lots of questions. I'm merely doing a job.
Yes.
These were asked previously, Nyami. Then you can follow up with your questions. Right, quickly, please.
Okay. As far as other individuals, our commitment was that as the PwC investigation proceeded, if certain concerns were raised, that the company would take action. There were concerns raised, and certain individuals' contracts were suspended. They were suspended, not terminated, which means that these individuals have an opportunity to respond to the concerns. And those steps have been taken. So that's a direct question, a direct answer, I believe.
Yeah, and presumably you're given a time limit.
Yes.
Before you. What's the time limit?
What is the time
limit? Yeah, can you release the names or is that going
to... I can deal with that, Chief.
Okay.
My name is Louis Dupre. I'm the commercial... Answer the question, please. My name is, good morning, everyone. My name is Louis Dupria. I'm the commercial director and on the management board of Steinhoff. So two individuals have been suspended, as was made public by the press last week. The one is Mr. Legrandsi, who's present this morning. The other is Mr. Stian Grobler. Mr. Grobler's employment contract was terminated as far back as January of this year. And his law firm was on a consultancy basis for a year. This is information that was made public at the AGM in April as well. But that agreement was suspended during the last 2 weeks, and then Mr. Legrandsi's contract was also suspended. I think another important factor for members to be aware of is that there is regular interaction with all the relevant regulators that are represented here today. In many instances, there are monthly meetings that are held with them, and under the requisite legal obligations that the company has in respect of those regulators, information is shared with those regulators, and some of that information is confidential under the provisions of the statutes under which they operate. So I can confirm on behalf of the company that there's been significant progress in that regard since we were here in January.
Okay, I think the protocol is to welcome the minister. That doesn't mean we are deferential to you, Ayanda Dlodlo, but it's good that a minister is here. Just to alert you, this is the Minister of Public Service and Administration. She's obviously here because government has a vested interest for the witnesses because they, as you know, to defined benefit, as Wilma explained, if Steinhoff really causes a huge ruckus financially, it's the Minister of Finance and so on to rescue, through the National Fiscus, the public sector employees. So welcome, Comrade Minister. Over to you in the order 1, 2, it was 3, 4, 5, and I think that's where we stopped. Okay, good. Preferably 3 to 4 minutes, and we'll come back for a second bite.
I just wanted the straight answer. Is the laws of South Africa so limited in being able to get justice to be arrested? Was quite just. I mean, just to treat you with contempt. He's got no regard for the board. He ignored it throughout the period that he's been running that institution. And he did everything on his own. He's undermining Parliament, which is a constitutional body. He's kicking all of us in the dust after he's corrupted the company and corrupted our economy. It's difficult to get him arrested because he's not even going to you. He's not even coming to your commissions. He's ignoring you. He's not providing the necessary information. Is he such a problem that he treats South Africans with contempt? My second one, the board in its own restructuring, has it been able to give you the capacity to run the board? Because if it's the continuity of the problem that has always been there in the board, of you being ignored, then there's no restructuring of that board. It means the old mode continuing and people just sitting in their comfortable zones and entertaining that they are being viewed or called by us to Parliament with no mindset that has changed to bring in. And at which stage are you going to bring in the PE companies to be able to assert themselves, because I don't see any change to that. What does it mean in the long run? and in preparation of this particular company, so that it does become domesticated more than answering to international investors with no improvement in how was the damage of your company damages South Africa and its image. Now that's why Parliament is involved, because you want to improve, but you can't improve on rottenness. What is it that you can be able to show us? The auditing company, the last one. I mean, Deloitte and Toll, just, it's an old audit company that couldn't even provide you with evidence, more reliant on trust, and nothing provided, nothing given to you as information. What are you doing with that auditing company? Is it difficult to get it arrested, or are you going to wait for the PwC report? That would be very strange on a company that is deep in the rottenness, never given you the reports. It acts as it's like, but you can't find difficult. Those are the answers I want. Okay.
Thank you, Nyami.
Now, thanks, Chair. I don't have a lot of questions. I wanted to check if there is any possibility of ever saving Steynhoff or ever like reviving Steynhoff under whatever form, or is it gone forever? That is what I wanted to check from those that are representing Steynhoff, and if there's such possibility, what does it entail? Will we be able to recover the monies that we borrowed to Jayantra and I do to buy shares worth 9.9 billion rands in the Steynhoff, because the PIC had given him money to buy shares in Steynhoff. Are we ever going to recover that money in terms of, but also to check if the entire deal was insured in a way that we could in the immediate recover some of the losses that were encountered in the drastic devaluation and ultimate collapse of Steynhoff. And two, it's whether the collapse of Steynhoff did not have impact on the some of the domestic investments, particularly STAR. What is the relationship and the systemic implications that are going to affect STAR, lead to its collapse, and broadly the Shoprite interest in terms of what could have possibly happened? Because I think despite the mediocrity of jobs that are created by Shoprite and the interest around Steynhoff domestically, despite the mediocrity and low wages that are paid to workers, the number of jobs are quite substantial. And if we were to have that collapsing, it might be a big challenge. Aren't we facing the same threat, and what prudentially do we do to guide a process that will prevent the whole group from collapsing? Because I don't think that it is possible that you could have had the creative accounting practices at that level and they're not replicated elsewhere, particularly in the South African interest, because the same players, same faces, who have been working together for a very long time. And I don't buy the story that some of the major shareholders were not aware of what was happening in Steynhoff. They only became aware 2 or 3 days before. It's possible. And I'm sure that if we were to dig deeper, we will then be able to establish that Christo Visi, Steven Boysen, Johan van Zyl were closely aware of what is happening in Steynhoff. I don't think that they were not aware. They can't claim the ignorance now in terms of what happened. And who can chase Marcus Justa will possibly find him. He will try to delay us with the legal processes and court challenges. But I think that the main culprits in all of this, who must be held accountable, is the directors of Steinhoff, who, by the way, still play important and significant roles in other institutions here in South Africa. We might need to thoroughly investigate their complicity in the collapse of the whole company. I think one of the issues that we must have to look into. Thanks.
People, Ben Lafranc just let us speak and we're going to ask him questions, but we prefer to have both of them together and, you know, we're going to ask questions, but members took a different course and we agreeing to it. But please remember we've got Ben Lafranc as well. Okay, Mr. Mania.
Thank you, Chair. Three questions and just one comment. My first question is, when Steinhoff appeared last, your version essentially, supported by your PR stunt, handing an affidavit to the Hawks implicating Marcus Justa. Your version essentially was that Marcus Justa perpetrated a massive fraud all on his own and nobody knew anything about it, least of all the non-executive directors. Now, given the investigations that are proceeding, is that still your version? Or have you, in fact, now discovered that other individuals were involved or knew about the fraud perpetrated? And if that is your case, that is the case, what are the names of those individuals? That's the first question. The second question is, on the 7th of December 2017, you issued a statement in respect of Mr. Ben Lacranchy, which reads, based on the current information at the board's disposal, there is no evidence to suggest that the CEO had any involvement in the matters under investigation. Therefore, the company wishes to confirm that its CFO, Mr. Ben Lacranchy, remains in his position. Now, is that still the case? Or, and I think this is probably... Does the board stand by that statement, or indeed, has evidence now emerged that Mr. Ben Lacranchy, in fact, was involved under the matters under investigation, and as a result of that, the company has chosen to suspend him? So I want to know, why did the company decide to suspend Mr. Lacranchy, and based on what evidence? And is this version in your statement on the 7th of December still your current version? Then the third question. I mean, it's now a matter of public knowledge that Steinhoff significantly restated its financial statements. What is the nature of the fraud that caused Steinhoff to so significantly restate be compelled to restate its financial statements? And then finally, Chair, just one observation. I recall that at our last meeting, Steinhoff undertook to furnish this committee with a copy of their affidavit, which they had lodged with the Hawks. I'm not aware that they have provided that affidavit. And second, Steinhoff undertook to provide us with a breakdown of the structure of the company and together with the names of the auditors of each of the components of those companies. So I think it's vital that we know, particularly who the auditors of Steinhoff Finance Holdings, Steinhoff, is it Mobile Holdings, Hemisphere International Properties, and Steinhoff Europe AG. We need to know who the auditors of those companies were. Because the hypothesis is that in order to perpetrate this fraud, those companies were not audited by Big Four auditors. They were audited, allegedly, by small, boutique, compliant auditors. We need to know the names of those auditors. Thank you.
The request for the documents, insofar as we've asked for it before, it's the committee secretaries responsible to follow up. I'm alerting the committee secretaries that you have to do that, Tibor and Alan. And within 48 hours, unless there's a legal problem you have, in which case provide it to us, why you can't release the documents, can we please have it within 48 hours? Okay, the two requested by Mr. Mania. It flows from the last meeting, as I gather. Okay, Tandi?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, before I make any comment, I need to correct Mrs. Son when she said they voluntarily appeared in front of the committee. It was per our invitation. At no point did Steinhoff decide that it will appear here. So it should be on record.
Those of you who are new, Steinhoff initially resisted coming.
Yes.
They used the same sort of arguments with our lawyers and myself that you had in Mr. Eustace's representations, but less crude than Mr. Eustace. It called for a lot of engagement between the attorneys and myself, but to be fair to the attorneys, after we raised the issues with them directly, myself and Mr. Dreeman, they were quite cooperative. And to be fair to Heather, once she found me and I found her, she's been very cooperative in that regard. But the truth is, initially they were not coming. Yes.
You see, when you're on record and you say it's a voluntary appearance, it's incorrect. So we're on record here, so I want to clarify that it's never been a voluntary appearance. There's a lot of work that went into it. Secondly, I need to register my disappointment at Steinhoff in relation to the progress that should have been made on the questions that were asked the last time that needed to be responded to here. And I'm also a bit disappointed that Ms. Son seems to be doing a PR exercise, speaking about jobs, speaking about cash flow generation. It's not the gist of the matter. We did not meet here to discuss how many employees you have and how your cash flow looks like. We're here because there's an issue of exposure of pension funds and the shareholder value that dropped, and that's the gist of the matter. So the other issues don't really belong here. But let me go to the issues that were supposed to be responded to, which has not been adequately responded. For instance, in relation to the findings on the statements that the 2017 statements, you did not indicate a timeline as to when this year are those going to be stated. So that goes into a question that I'll ask PwC later, whether such information was given to them on time. And secondly, you raise a fundamental issue which is going to be very interesting as and when we engage with JSC at a later stage about audited financial statements. You don't give us clarity whether have you restated the financial statement or not, so that we understand in which financial year or how far way back have you gone to reinstate those financial statements, because that's the gist of the matter that we discussed in the last meeting. We wanted to know how far you can go, because we believe that misinformation did not just start in the last financial year, but there is a possibility that it goes into three financial years. So the disclosure doesn't necessarily tell you about who did what when. It just states the fact so that we understand the scope that PwC will be engaged upon. So it's not a legal question. It will not put you in a difficult space. Thirdly, I'm interested to know the position of Mr. Grobler, because it's going to speak to what David Mayner has raised here about what you said in the last meeting, because we're trying to establish consistency in the responses so that we'll be able to understand how many of your officials were exposed to this crisis. And we also need to know at what point are we going to get a opinion by your senior counsel on matters that were raised before that not necessarily need you to respond to legal matters, because there's a combination of factors in the questions that has been asked. Some will belong to legal opinions, but some will just be administrative issues to give us an idea how going forward you're going to deal with this matter. Chair, I want to ask those questions for now. I'll come back to others at a later stage. Thank you.
Who's next, Mr. Lees?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, a big difference. But it's important to the whole world that yesterday's debate went very, very well on the Money Bills Act, and we largely agreed with the opposition members. It may be a coincidence that a certain member of this committee didn't participate in that debate, and I'm not referring to the EFF. Chairman, your love relationship with David Mania is wonderful to perceive. Let me just start with the audited, the restated audited financial statements. Heather, you're saying, sorry, Ms. Zorn, you're saying that the PwC work will be completed by the end of December 2018, and that Deloitte's are kind of waiting on PwC. No, you're shaking your head? Well, answer. So really what I'm looking for is when will the Deloitte restatement of the financial statements be ready for us? Then you said that PwC have made certain findings and they've been handed over. First of all, I don't know that it's been fully confirmed. PwC have or have not issued you with an interim report. There's been talk about it, but I don't get a sense that you've actually got a report in your hand. Then in terms of the findings, have those come out of PwC, but not just in a formal interim report? I understand from what you're saying, you're getting regular feedback from PwC in some kind of usable form, not just an oral like we're doing here. There's evidence of malfeasance and you're handing it over, but you're not saying to whom. And so what we've heard is that there are three if you include Juster, two people who had their employment suspended. But out of 120,000 odd employees, and PwC having been embroiled in this work for some 8 or 9 months now, is it only two people who've come out of that? Because Juster is a separate issue altogether, as I understand it. So you're saying that you're getting these findings from the PwC and you're handing them over. How many have there been that you've handed over? Is it only the two that you've suspended? And who have they been handed over to? Which, and what is the broad outline, without compromising the case, of the malfeasance that is involved in each case? We really do need to drill down a bit here. If you could, I would really appreciate that. Thank you. Very much for that. Let's just leave it there for now.
Thank you. All these questions I was going to ask, Mr. Lee, exactly that. We don't even know whether you have an interim report. Ah, David Ross.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to follow up on my colleague, Honourable Lees. Chairperson, I think we've also stated that in the last engagement that it's only with properly audited information that financial markets can function. I think it's common knowledge, and in the case of Steinhoff, I would believe you need those audited information to access loans. Now, Masson, you've indicated that that Steinhoff has averted liquidation and perhaps the implosion of the company. And I think it should have, if I make the assumption, that it must have been a very difficult exercise to instill confidence without the audited financial statements especially 15, 16 being restated and outstanding on 17 and 18 still to come in, as you say, at the end of the year and then early January. Now, my question to you is, in terms of your endeavours, perhaps your action or inaction with regards to findings, as the Honourable Lisa stated. We would like to have more information on that. And perhaps in the interim reports in building this confidence to make sure that you can present something to the banks and the learning institutions and instill confidence also in the markets, which also you need the share price to be stabilised. So that is a bit of a perplexing and a grey area for me. How did you stabilise the situation without the actual audited information? And I believe we would like to see more information on this. Now the key here is, if these 2015-16 statements has been restated, what is the position of the going concern in those? What is the going concern findings by the auditors in this regard in the 2015-16? And what do you judge would be the going concern status then in 2017 and 2018, because certainly you should have had presented to the banks some idea of a going concern status as to the future in your prediction. And I think you need to take us perhaps in confidence with regards to those. On what basis did you acquire the loans and instill confidence perhaps in also with regards to the investments of the PIC, etc. But my second issue would be with regards to your reference to the regulators, and you've indicated you have engagement with the regulators on an ongoing basis. Which are those regulators, and what are the current status in terms of the ongoing interactions with those regulators? Only those two issues. Thank you, Chairperson.
thank you, Comrade Chair. I think on my part the temptation was there to wait until after your responses, but I think I do need to make this point before you respond. But I get the questions that comrades have put to you from different angles, but I would have wished that the opportunity you had to present could and should have been utilized a little much better in terms of detail, especially in the context of the ability to engage as and when you are available, so that it becomes a bit more meaningful. As you recall, when we met in January, the fundamental question was, what went wrong? What happened? And you said to us, look, we also are not sure. We don't know. We're engaging PwC so that they can help us to dig and have a sense. And in our second meeting, PwC was there. They were able to give us a sense of how they want to work, the 14 streams, and how they'll be reporting on each as they complete. And here we are today. So I would imagine that in terms of a presentation, we should be able to get a sense. Look, we now have a sense of what went wrong. It is okay to talk about employment. That was one of our concerns. The issue of the shares is also one of our concerns in terms of the investment. But I think the fundamental question is, what went wrong in the institution? What were the arrangements that became enablers for the issues that are there? And I think if you listen to Comrade Boy's input, I think that was the nub of his concern, that when we hear all these other things, but we don't have a sense of what went wrong. And when you deal with what went wrong, that's where now it comes to the actions of individuals and all that kind of stuff. So I think if we had approached it that way, it would assist us, so that we don't have an impression that you will give information to the extent that will probe. Otherwise, you will hold back and wait. I would hope that in your response you just take that into account broadly, to say our interest is what went wrong. What went wrong in the company?
Vilma, do you want to raise anything, please?
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. One question. The last time I was here in the joint meeting, what started this whole thing was that your auditors refused to sign off on the financial statements. And normally, auditors, when they refuse to sign, they already know what is wrong, which gives them the reason not to sign. So I want to know, what did the auditors say, the various reasons why they refused to sign off, and that why would have helped the company to correct the financial statements. So I still need an answer on why they refused to sign off on the financial statements originally, because those reasons, you know, that must assist you in the future financial years, and soon we're coming to the next financial year, 17, 18, 19 must still be done. So why did they refuse to sign off? We still don't have that answer. Thank you, Chair.
Very quickly, I think Alf covered two of the questions I wanted to ask, but Denver's covered it largely. As chairs, you know, our job is to facilitate. Let's be fair. When you came here in January, we were new board. You were fuzzy, we understood. We were soft on you, so much so that some members complained about us. The unions were unhappy, and we had explained to them why. Secondly, you sent PwC. In fact, it was because you said to us that meeting in June will not help. Remember, you intervened and said, we're going to a quarterly meeting, and we're not foregoing that. Whatever happens, we need to let everybody know. No matter what the bills are, this issue is too big. Up till the time of the end of this term, sometime in April, May next year, we will have quarterly meetings. Now, we postponed our quarterly meeting in June because PwC said, and Steinhoff, whoever was there, said, you know what, we will not be ready with the interim report. Then we said, okay, third week of August. And because of practical problems, it became the fourth week of August. Now, to be fair to the committee, two things have arisen. One, the topic is progress since March. You know, there's no other word to describe it. It would be remiss of me not to, it's wishy-washy. It's generalities. We're not even clear, as Mr. Lee says, do you or don't you have an interim report? Now, we're also clearer now, and hopefully over the next quarter, about what the legal parameters are of what we can ask you. Now, one of the things I should say as a chair, I think the three chairs discussed it yesterday and the ANC met also, we have got clarity a bit more now on what we can ask a private sector entity, which has implications for the public sector employees and other sectors of South African society that the state has to protect. We can ask you more questions than we thought we did. The rules are going to be changed in Parliament in the next term about private sector entities. But at the same time, we have to be cautious that we do not undermine the criminal investigations and the investigations by the regulators, wittingly or unwittingly, by the questions we pose to you, which is why Mr. Jenkins went through the way he did. We can't ask you questions that will become the subject, the lawyers tell us, of criminal and civil proceedings. But the parameters are quite wider now, we're clearer, so we can be more stringent in our oversight. So basically, what are we saying? The co-chair and I are saying one, and I think others are saying it in different ways, there's no progress substantially. You struck the deal with us for the meeting held in August. Frankly, there's no evidence why we shouldn't have had it in June. Secondly, you're not helping, and we're worried. You must give us legal arguments for why you won't answer specific questions. You have to give a legal argument why you won't give us a name. And then Advocate Jenkins will engage as a lawyer, and then we must decide. And finally, the court decides if you refuse to answer the questions. So, Ms. Son, it's disappointing. It's bordering on demoralizing, actually. And we feel that you're not fully appreciating the gravity of what's at issue here. So we're pleading with you, answer questions precisely. Where you can't, let the lawyer say why they can't. Let Advocate Jenkins say what he wants to say, and let the members decide what we do. Precise answers, please.
There have been quite a few questions, Chair, and I will attempt to get through them as best I can. Whatever I miss, Louis, you can add in, and if there's some to wrap up before we move on to the next item, then we will do that. I first just have to state for myself is that this is certainly not for me a PR exercise. It certainly is not about getting through the process. I think for us,
and stepping into the position was precisely because of the gravity of the situation and because of the commitment to see it through all the way, ultimately, until we can have some relief, hopefully, through our processes for the pension funds. That's my motivation. That's why I do what I do. So this is not I don't take it lightly in any regard. I do, however, in my own mind, in thinking about your questions, I do think about all the considerations that we have as a company and what I may say here that jeopardizes our criminal proceedings. And I know we've heard from the lawyers and we've heard your assurances, and I'm constantly hearing the questions, understanding what my position is within the company and trying to filter answers that will satisfy your right to ask these questions but not jeopardize any processes. And only I am in that position to put that all in my head and try and be satisfactory to this committee. So please this gathering, please don't see what I'm doing here as an attempt to try and withhold anything. I'm thinking about all these considerations that we are dealing with on a daily basis. I'll try and group them. So as far as the financial statements go, the company has released unaudited interim results in June. And that is included on page 17 of our report, bullet three. The half year results, the income statement for the 6 months ended 31 March 2018 and 2017 restated. The balance sheet as of 31 March and 31 2017 restated, and 30 September 2017. The cash flow statement for the 6 months ended 31 March 2018 and 31 March 2017 restated. The trading update for the 6 months ended 31 March 2018 and the restated 2017 comparatives. And then there was a question as to when we intend, and we did commit this publicly and in this committee, that our commitment was to release the audited results for 2017 at the end of this financial year. That commitment remains in place. End of December 2018. As far as the audited for the current financial year, which is 2018, those audited results are on track to be released at the end of or sometime in January. We don't yet have a commitment of a date. The team is working to satisfy both those requirements, and we can say January 2019 for those audited financial results. In terms of what we are uncovering in the company, in terms of what went wrong, there are indications, and I think the PwC investigation is starting to show us very clearly. And if you look at those restated financial results, you can see what they were previously and what they are now. So you can see the extent of the misstatement and what or the extent to what we thought it was previously and what it is and what we've restated it, having reversed some of these calculations. As far as working with PwC and Deloitte, there was a concern where Deloitte had said that it needed PwC's investigation to support its process. The company then took a view that we have to resource up the company's internal team, have them go through each and every item in all our financial statements, have them come up with a draft that then goes to PwC for a full investigation. There's no limit. We said it before, we've said it here again. Unlimited access to the company, no definition on scope for PwC initially, but to put some speed to that process. PwC then has an opportunity to thoroughly investigate those numbers, those draft numbers, and Deloitte will then have an opportunity to review what has been put both by the company and by PwC's findings and then put its own assurance to those numbers.
So as far as that process goes, that was a question that was asked, and that is how the company is addressing that against the deadlines of December and January. So that's as far as that goes. As far as why the audit company Deloitte did not want to sign off on or resisted signing off on the financial statements is that they were going through a process. There were various allegations that came out from various sources. You would have been aware of media reports in terms of question marks around the company's financials. All of this raised some concern. The audit committee of the company also took a look at that, worked together with Deloitte, and asked for audit evidence to support what the concerns were. That audit evidence could not be produced, and that's what led ultimately to Deloitte coming to the position that it said it would not sign off the financial statement. So those were the events that led to that process. It was around that time, on the 5th of December, that PwC was immediately approached to do an investigation. The previous concerns, the company did enter into independent investigation and were given assurances that all the concerns that were raised could be addressed by these independent processes. At this stage, because the audit evidence could not be produced, the decision was then made to not sign off, but instead to bring PwC into the process and to go through a thorough, unlimited investigation. It was at that stage that it was clear that there was something that needed a proper look, and we would follow that process through with PwC. I accept the point on that it's not a voluntary. I understand that we were asked to come here, but after our conversations, we immediately saw it as something that would be useful to both processes, and we agreed to do that, and we will continue to do that. As far as the expectations of this committee, I certainly take a responsibility to ensure that we have a proper engagement before coming here so that we can be absolutely sure which key points, and I think some of them are obvious, but we also need to measure it against the processes and concerns internally and to have a proper conversation about the expectation of this committee moving forward. I certainly take responsibility to firstly come and secondly to be absolutely focused on the key issues that this gathering wants to focus on. I'm just trying to see where... yes, there was a question with regards, but the member's not here at the moment, but he asked a question about the board, the old board and the new board. The board at the time was made up of about 10 members. The change was that only 3 members remained as at that time, and an entirely new board. The rest of the members, I think we're 10 or 11 now, and it was brought on. They served immediately under Dutch law under an NDA and then were ratified by the shareholders on the 20th of April 2018 as being properly given all their powers by shareholders to act. These are all new members to the board. They've been, as far as do we have the commensurate skills, we looked at each individual person in terms of what their skills are and what they bring.
the and then as a second look as how that team may how they may work together as a team. The one weakness that we determined in the process of moving forward was specific skills around restructuring. We understood that there would be an incredible, and there had been significant engagement with creditors. While all of us applied ourselves as best as we could to those processes, we have now appointed someone in the name of Paul Copley, who has dealt with restructuring in the jurisdictions where our companies operate. That appointment has been made, and we believe that that's significant, that that strengthens the board in an area, and we are constantly looking at what the if there are any places to strengthen the board further. That is how we are doing it. In terms of the management board, only one management board member remained, and the rest of the management board members were brought onto the management board. In the NV structure, I think I said this before, there's a supervisor, it's called a binary board, a management board and a supervisory board, and one member of the management board stayed and other members were brought on. I think it is important to note that the company will go through its strategic discussions on Friday. One question was, can this company be saved? I think a question that one asks from time to time is, should this company be saved? And I think we weigh that against all the stakeholders, as we've said before, and whether we believe that there's any value in retaining some core part of the business and continue to grow it. On the first day that I was asked to take this position, I asked for a picture of the person who lost the most, the biggest loser. We couldn't find a picture, but that is the picture that I keep in my mind in terms of who lost, who the pensioner is. And as long as there is hope that we can get to some return for that individual, those sets of individuals, we will not stop trying. And that is this company worth saving or not? We will continue to try. As far as could there be an event in the future which takes it out of our control, like an event of default or a call for insolvency, I think because we have a standstill agreement with the banks, the term sheet, someone asked questions about the arrangements with the creditors, the term sheets are public information, they have been published, and what they allow for are, together with our creditors, arrangements that allow us to keep carrying on in the process of trying to bring down our debt. So they will not in that period trigger an event that is out of our control. So I think we have a chance. We will continue to fight for that chance, and as long as that looks possible, those of us who are in these positions, we will continue to drive that process. As far as whether these matters, translate into other companies like Star, which is now renamed Pepco, Star is a separately listed entity, so it has to answer its questions for itself. It is a very valuable asset, so when we think of our options and we think of selling down debt, and then we think with the ultimate shareholder in mind, and we think about the company as a going concern, we need certain entities that are able to generate cash for us to service the remaining debt. Star is a valuable asset in the group. We continue to look at it. There are members of the Steinhoff NV on that group, on that committee, and as a shareholder, Steinhoff has to keep looking for its own reasons, has to keep looking at the robust functioning of Star. As far as BEE goes, I certainly believe that diversity on boards and bringing various opinions is critical. It helps us to align in the DNA of the organizations, the future that we think is possible. So that's why it is important. It allows us to build sustainability. I can report that the board is significantly diverse, despite the fact that it doesn't have to comply with South African laws in this regard. But we have chosen to do that. Additionally, from an NV or Dutch company point of view, we do not need to have a social and ethics committee. From an NV point of view, we need a governance and ethics, but we have raised the bar as a company and called it a social ethics and governance committee to oversee all of the highest standards that are required from a South African point of view as well as an NV point of view. So we have raised the South African requirement to the NV holding company. So I think those are some of the ways in which we are looking to see how we build in what we learn in a South African context into a holding company that's Dutch registered. As far as PwC goes, I just state again, it has an entirely open scope, and it has now started to identify what it has identified where the core issues are, and it is following the process to determine and uncover more and more of the information that will support that specific case. The focus at the moment is on evidence so that those processes can be followed. When that information is available, it is handed over. I'm going to ask...
Is it handed over? To who? Secondly, the questions asked by members, right? Look, I know the 3 chairs have conferred, right? What we're asking for is the committee to actually... Yeah, okay, can I just deal with process, right? Wilma, you'll have to speak first, right? Because you're a co-chair. So the 3 chairs are suggesting, look, there's a lot of unhappiness even now about the answers to the questions, I presume. But Mr. Ben Lagrange also has to speak. So what we are suggesting is maybe we have Mr. Ben Lagrange give us his 10-minute or so overview. Lawyers have been exchanging with him about the parameters of that. And then we engage with Mr. Ben Lagrange, and then we come back to Steinhoff, right? And then there's another option, which I'm not sure I raised with Temba and Joan, is then we hear from the regulators where things are, because our primary concern is to ensure the regulators do the job. And then we come back to Steinhoff at the end, so that we're able to ask more questions, more nuanced, more precise, and more towards achieving something. And if need be, we expand the time. So we're asking for 2 things. One is, let's hear Mr. Ben Lagrange for now. Let's ask him questions. Let's come back to Heather and them, and come back to them at the end of the meeting, after having other regulators if need be. And 2 is, we're not going to end at 16:30, that we expand the meeting for as long as we need to. So those are the 2 proposals. Have I got it right, Temba? Right, Joe? Yeah. Okay, Wilma, what do you think? Hang on, I'm coming to you now on process, right? Yeah. Wilma, do you agree or not with that?
I agree with you, Chair. I think gathering the information, it's obvious that this information that is gathered, will it be made public? And that's one question for me, but I agree with you, Chair, that we follow those 2 processes.
So can we go to Mr. Ben Lagrange? What on process matters, Nati had his hand up, then Nyami Boy, then Mr. Mania. On process issues, Tandi. David, do you want to speak on process or content?
I'll speak on context.
Okay, process issues, yeah. Only process issues, okay. Nati, do you agree with the broad...
No, I wanted to address myself... Okay.
Yeah, I was just checking. Do we... Are the hands that are up on process? Do you want to talk on process? Because I thought the suggestion was, let's allow Mr. Lagrange to talk to us, and then we can then engage on content.
I certainly wanted to address myself towards the Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Now, and I want to make sure that I understood correctly, because I understood your fellow chair is saying that we take Mr. Lekhranje, we then take regulators, and then we come into a discussion. Is that not the case? Okay.
In case I speak too fast, I apologize for that. I'm saying let's take Mr. Ben Lekhranje now, because there are questions that he would answer that would help us in maybe insights into questions we've raised to Mrs. Song. Secondly, we would take further questions to Mrs. Son based on what Mr. Ben Lekhranje says. So that's a second bite at Mrs. Son and her team. Then we hear the regulators. We will get insights into where things are. For example, right, just give one example. Mrs. Son claims or says that they are cooperating with the Hawks. Then when the Hawks come here, they will say, yes, we met Mrs. Son on four occasions in the last 3-4 months, or we haven't met Mrs. Son. Then we will come back and ask Mrs. Son, but how many times did you meet him? So, in other words, our ability to focus, remember, we're not only concerned with Steinhoff, we're concerned with everybody here. So, you will get a chance to ask all the questions you want based on the second proposal we've got, which is we don't end at 16:30 and carry on for as long as we need to.
Thanks for speaking slowly, Chair. Thank you very much.
So if anybody disagrees with that, maybe that's the issue.
Chair, I'm happy with your proposal, but I'd like to make an additional proposal. The problem is that we put questions, but those questions are never replied to. In detail. My proposal is that the chairs allow a member an opportunity to ask perhaps a maximum of 3 questions, and that the witness then immediately responds to those questions. Otherwise, we're just simply not going to get the kind of responses that we need. Because what the committee and the members are after is detail. What we're getting are general statements. It's like punching jelly, Jay.
Okay. Do people agree with that? Imkoleko?
No, thanks, Jay. No, I'm in agreement with Proposal 1 and the addition that has been made. I wanted to just add that when Ms. Son comes back with research to come at the end again, can in the interim, can they actually get themselves occupied with answers to the questions that have been posed already, so that when she does come back, we get in actual detail. The fluff and the generalization, so she has an opportunity now while she can multitask, listen to what she's saying, but actually go back to what she's been asked, so that members don't have to ask the same questions again.
Chair, can I also make a suggestion?
Before you do,
okay.
No, before
yeah.
you do, you
okay.
can't at this stage. It's for Parliament to decide, and then you will respond to what we say, but you can't make a suggestion, no. Yummy boy.
Can... As I said earlier, that let's not build on rottenness of the company. How much is the size of your debt? But you must understand where our concern on the pension fund and the PIC has to revamp that company. Are you rebuilding or are you transforming on that rottenness? Because you are so much indebted and chose to play around with our money. Is that the same situation that you are seated for?
And I'm asking about content issue. We can come back to that. On process, please, Tandy, we've got to move on.
Process. Chair, you see, David got a point. There are certain questions that have not been responded to, and those are not legal questions. Are questions that will assist members going forward as to what other questions can they ask the rest of the team. And I would have wanted to highlight them at some point, so that even if the answer doesn't come in the immediate, but she knows which are those questions that should be responded to.
Then, with the addition of David Mania, 3 questions each, up to a maximum of 3 minutes, right? Otherwise, people can ask 3 questions for thousands of hours. So we're all agreeing on the process. Now, having heard us on what we think you should do, you can respond. But it's not for you, you understand, to decide how you should be
I understand.
But now you can respond and say it's unreasonable if you
Thank
want.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I understand the process. The thought I had as I heard these comments was that we had said that I would handle some questions, and I would hand over to my colleague to deal with some of them. And I was wondering if we gave him an opportunity now to consider some of the detail that has been, some of those questions would already have been answered. And the rest of the process for me is fine.
Then, Ms. Son, we plead with you not to speak then, in the generalities you are. Let the colleague of yours, who's a lawyer, is he? Let him answer. We want precise answers. Whether it comes from you or some junior manager is neither here nor there. So are we agreeing then that let him quickly reply precisely, and then we're moving towards the David Mania approach, but we are clear that it's within the parameters that, you know, I think he also agrees that we're not going to ask you, did you take money and put it into a bank account in, what's this, where's this places? You know these places, Mauritius, and where's this, the Cayman Islands? No. You can't ask those questions, right? But apart from that, yes, we'll ask questions. Now, quickly, can you reply to the precise question?
I can, Chair, if you so. There's a number of issues, and I hope I get them all. The first is on progress. There's a huge frustration in the room about progress. I think the one bit that has not been highlighted sufficiently is the progress that has been made with financial creditors. And a lot of it is in the presentation. If the current debt is in round figures about 10 billion euros, and that debt has been, a lot of the time that's been spent over the last 6 or 7 months since we've been here last, was to ensure that debt gets restructured. Because where we were in January, we were in a position that the company was potentially in free fall, and that debt was all payable on demand. So what we have a group has managed to secure over the last 6 or 7 months is we've secured a standstill with our international lenders, which will, if the term sheets are implemented, which we are confident will be done by 20 October of this year, is the group will have a 3-year period within which period no interest will have to be repaid on that debt. It's so-called payment in kind interest. So from a cash flow perspective, dealing with the going concern questions that have been raised, is there will be no interest that will be paid on that debt. At the time that we were here in January, there was 182 international lenders that held debt in this company. That number is significantly reduced. It's now on last count about just over 50 people. The traditional commercial banks have all sold out their debt, and the debt is now owned predominantly by hedge funds. The South African position, which I think is important for this room, at the time when we were here in January, the total debt of Steinhoff on holding company level for South Africa was approximately 2 billion euros, and round figures at the time, 30 billion rand. All of that debt has been repaid. So in January, the debt was 2 billion euros. It is now bar for some working capital in Unitrans, that has all been paid. So no South African bank has got any exposure to Steinhoff. There is debt in Star. Star is a separately listed entity in which we own 71% of the issued share capital. There's approximately 16 billion rands of debt in Star. You would have seen in the presentation on pages 10 and 11, you've seen what the turnover of Star, it's now called Pepco, the name changed some 2 weeks ago. It had a turnover in euro figures for the first 6 months of the year, ended at the end of March of this year, of approximately 2.2 billion euros. There was questions about Shoprite. Shoprite does not form part of the Steinhoff Group at all. It's a separately listed company, and Steinhoff has no interest at all within the Shoprite and within the Shoprite group. Dealing with Deloitte was appointed as the auditors of the group for 2017 and 2018 audits by the shareholders of the company at the AGM held in Amsterdam on 20 April 2018. We have gone out on tender for the 2019 audit. Deloitte was not invited to take part in that tender. Dealing with some of the European companies, is Deloitte for instance, Stein of Europe and Stein of Finance. Deloitte, at the time, prior to December 2017, they were not the component auditor of those entities. There were German companies that were auditors of those two separate German-listed companies, of those entities, sorry, listed separate audit companies. We have, subsequent to December, asked Deloitte to take over the component audits for those entities for the 2017 and the 2018 audits. Dealing with PwC is I and the management team have weekly contact with PwC. In fact, I've got two calls a week set up with them. At the current moment, there's more than 100 people of PwC that works on this assignment across the world. The costs for this company in employing PwC is significant. The moment it runs north of 200 million rand. The reports that we get from PwC is that they report to the supervisory board on top of that on a monthly or bi-monthly basis. We do get mostly verbal reports for them. There have been two written reports. The first written report dealt with a specific matter in Switzerland, which is a commercial transaction that I will bring to the supervisory board in the next week or so for approval to ensure that the trademarks that are the manufacturing trademarks that are owned outside of the group is potentially brought back on balance sheet. And the second report that we received from PwC led to the suspension of Messias Lefrancy and Mr. Fogler. Those reports have, upon legal advice, been handed over to the relevant regulators, and the regulators are in possession of that report. Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Then, dealing with the names of individuals, it is, as you would have seen from the presentation, there is significant litigation that this group is facing, significant litigation. It is an issue that we as a company have to take very seriously. It is an issue that you will appreciate deals with issues of legal privilege. And it is something that we as a management board have to carefully consider to ensure that part of the PwC process and what we are saying in public is done within the strictures of the judicial processes that are followed. It is, you would have noticed, I think it's page, sorry, just give me a moment, it is page 15 of the presentation. Pleadings have been exchanged in some of those matters, in the extent that answering affidavits have been filed, the pleas have been filed, and other pleas will be filed during the course of next week. Dealing with the three shareholder claims, is there's three that are currently in the process or in the court processes. The first is the VEB matter in Amsterdam. That was the reason that we couldn't be here last week, because I had to appear in Amsterdam in the VEB matter, where the preliminary motions filed by Steinhoff were argued. And one of those matters that we requested the leave of the judge in Amsterdam was to institute civil proceedings against Mr. Joester. That matter is currently pending with the judge, and she indicated to us that she would deliver a judgment on the 26th of September of this year. The German group action that I refer to is a shareholder has requested the court in Frankfurt to authorize class action proceedings, and similar type of proceedings were filed. It's been widely publicized in the press by a retail shareholder in South Africa. That matter, the company has not received formal notice of, although I have a courtesy copy of the documentation, and we will deal with that as and when we formally receive those legal proceedings. Just want to make sure if the names, the evidence I've dealt with, the nature of the fraud. I think there were some questions about the nature of the fraud. is I think we as a management team, under the supervision of the supervisory board, have tried to break it into three sets. Number one, there is an important part of our mandate to ensure, as Heather said, that financial statements get finalized and published. And the accounting irregularities and the work that PwC is doing in that is very important. This is a massive group. The turnover of this group for the year will still be north of 20 billion euros. It operates in 30 countries, so please appreciate that is not a small task. It is a new management team, and we are trying to do our best to make sure that this happens as quickly as possible. Secondly, there has been, not just in this room, but from the public at large and from regulators and other jurisdictions, the same questions have been posed to us to say, but who was responsible? That is part of the balancing act that we have at the moment to ensure, on the one hand, that you get financial statements out, but you also try and fulfill that mandate. I know there's a frustration with the progress and the speed that has been made, but please appreciate with the available resources we're moving as quickly as we can, and what has been uncovered to date, the last of it, I probably think not. There might well be, and we have initial indications that there might be further processes against other individuals. And then thirdly is the future of the company. It is paramount that the debt gets stabilized. I think that has to a large extent happened. There are some of the international creditors present in this room today. I think it is important for us also to realize that there has been cash that one of the major things that we tried to set out here at the beginning was to ensure that the debt resides with the operating companies, because it is important for value to be unlocked in the fullness of time is that the operating companies survive. If we're not in a position where the operating companies can open their doors, there will be no value for stakeholders at the end. So it is, yes, financial statements, yes, individuals are obviously very important issues. But the third issue is probably the most important one, is that we want to be able to sit here in 3 years from now, whatever this company is called, if it's Steinhoff or something else, that it is still alive. And for it still to be alive, we have to ensure that the underlying companies can trade. I hope that there's some of the issues more directly.
Can we just go with the process you've agreed? You can come back to Steinhoff. Can we just hear Ben Lakranje, please? Right. Mr. Lakranje, you've got up to 10 minutes, and then we will ask you questions. Then we'll come back to Ms. Son and the team, and then we'll come back to you after the regulators are finished. Over to you, Mr. Ben Lakranje.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good afternoon, Chairpersons and Honourable Members. Thanks for allowing me the opportunity to address you. I'm not going to take the full 10 minutes because I think you guys want to get into questions. From my side, I'm also deeply saddened with the events that happened at Steinhoff and all the money that was lost, like the majority of people involved in trying to save this business. From my side, I also do not think I did anything deliberately wrong, and I hope that I can shed some light on what went wrong and also how to fix it into the future so that things like this does not repeat itself. And I've given that quite a bit of thought. Wisdom comes in hindsight. So from my side, I was the CFO appointed since 2013 of Steinhoff. So I became the CFO of Steinhoff in 2013. I was mainly responsible from an operational perspective for the business units in Africa, as well as co-responsibility for the business unit in the United States. Steinhoff is a complex group, and I'm pretty sure you have in your previous sessions been taken through the complexity of it, but I did prepare this slide for you in order to just take you through some of the complexities, because to really understand what went wrong, I think it's important to understand the way processes worked, and also the way reporting worked, and also the way scrutiny worked within this business. Apologies, I did not prepare handouts of these slides. I can make it available to you electronically if you need it. So if you can look on...
Email it as soon as you finish, then we'll distribute it this morning.
I will do that. So if you look at this slide, on the top of the slide is a block called Steinhoff International Holdings NV, which is the listed entity and the subject of our discussion here today. Then if you move to the left hand of the slide, you'll see there's all the African entities. In the middle there's a business called Mattress Firm and Sherwood, which is the US entities. And then to the right there's Steinhoff Finance Holdings and Steinhoff Europe Argia, and the Hemisphere Property Division and all the subsidiaries of Steinhoff Europe, which are all the subsidiaries that Steinhoff owns outside of Africa and America. I've also indicated to you on the slide the different layers of reporting that was in the structure in Steinhoff. So if you look at the slide, you'll see that there was multiple levels of reporting where there's multiple levels of boards. Also, at each of these levels, there would be internal audit committees and also external audit involvement. And then, therefore, those numbers are scrutinized at those different operational levels. If you look at the auditors, then each of those units would have what we would call component auditors, which is the auditor external responsible to sign off on the accounts of that unit. That unit would then be reported one level up in order to be tabled on a consolidated level at the following level, until such time as there's a Steinhoff Europe group of companies with a Steinhoff Europe audit committee, a Steinhoff Europe board, and to the same tune to the left of the slide, a Steinhoff Africa group with a Steinhoff Africa audit committee and a Steinhoff Africa board. From my side as the CFO of the listed entity, we would receive audited numbers from Steinhoff Africa, Mattress Firm and Sherwood together as the US cluster, as well as then the consolidated Steinhoff Europe numbers. And those numbers would then already have been scrutinized by the board of those operational entity level as well as the consolidated level, and being reviewed by the external auditors and being the subject of the board discussions and approved by the board. The staff I've got working with me in the Johannesburg and Stellenbosch offices would then receive these packs and the financial information that was verified and audited, and would consolidate them in order to get to a position that we disclose to the market in terms of the group's financial results. At no point in time would we as a group on the holding company level re-audit numbers. We relied on the processes and the institutions conducting them, and also the individuals involved in allowing that flow of information to us. The only thing we did do from a holding company's perspective is we did analytical procedures. So what that means is we looked at trends and movements of large balances, and then if something shows to us there might be something incorrect or wrong, we would inquire, and sometimes we would then find an error in the pack or a resubmission of that pack to us, again going through that whole audit procedure and process. From my side, I've expressed my willingness to appear in front of the committees already beginning or earlier this year. I'm willing to answer all your questions to the best of my ability, obviously given the extent of actions and investigations applicable, but that's a short introduction just to put things in perspective. I think I just want to add one more thing to this, just to maybe give you some flavor of what went wrong, because it sounds like a very positive story when I talk about levels of reporting and audit committees and internal and external audits. But actually what went wrong, in my mind, we can put into three buckets, and I know the detail is much more than this, and I'm pretty sure when the company responds to some more of your questions, they might be able to decide to go into more detail than I would, but just to make it quite simple. So first of all, there were inflated profits. So that we all know, and the company has made that public. Now, the main source of inflated profits resulted from what was called contributions. We were all led to believe at different levels in the company that there's an external buying group. So what the buying group would do is it would take volumes of products that gets purchased by all the different brands, and then someone would negotiate with suppliers in order to give additional rebates to the group. So what transpired is there was a buying group, and this buying group paid contributions or additional rebates to the operating entities. and therefore the company shows that profit coming into its income statement. However, this buying group now seems to look as if it is non-existent, and it was actually funded with loans from Steinhoff. So what that means is Steinhoff made a loan to the buying group, the buying group paid profits to Steinhoff, and therefore there's income in the numbers, and on the balance sheet there's a loan. And that is now, and apologies, I'm trying to keep it simple, otherwise one gets lost in the detail of all of this, that it's taking PwC 8 months to get to all these answers, and they've got much more detail than what I would have, but I think that gives you a sense of what happened. These contributions flowed into all parts of the company, also on the Steinhoff Africa part of the company, so it's not just Europe. The bulk of it, however, was in Europe, and the material amounts were in Europe. The reason for my suspension, which I'm sure you're going to get to, so I might just share, the reason for my suspension, I was not given written suspension notice, so I don't have all the detail of the reasoning behind it, and I'm also not privy to the PwC report, so it's difficult to comment on anything, but I was given a reason that the issuance of this invoice from the African group of companies that I implemented and authorized to the buying group was the reason for my suspension. So that's the first bucket of what went wrong. The second bucket of what went wrong related to transactions where assets would be acquired at inflated values. And for there's a lot of permutations. We can maybe, when we get to questions, go into more detail for that one. And then the last issue at hand is there were a number of transactions where, certainly from my side, I thought the parties we are dealing with are valid third parties and it's valid transactions, and now it seems that these parties are in fact related to the previous CEO or related to the company, depending on how you want to view it. Or I should rather not say related to the previous CEO, but I should rather say influenced by the previous CEO. And that is also one of the transactions that Mr. Dupree refers to in terms of the buying back of the trademarks of the manufacturing side of the business. And that's sort of the three buckets. In my mind, one of the things that could have mitigated this, it will not take away all the risk. I think if there's intent to misrepresent and there's a couple of people working together and you can find maybe an auditor that does not do their job properly or assists, then it will be very difficult to really stop that in a corporate environment. But certainly looking at what went wrong in the Steinhoff environment, and one of the learned members pointed it out earlier in a comment, is the fact that we did not have a single set of auditors for the group. I really think that's where things got very difficult. Maybe to point out to you when I spoke earlier about the inflated values, you would have seen from the interim results that the company announced that another item that was inflated was cash and cash equivalents. Now, if you look at that structure over there, if you look to the right to Steinhoff Europe would have its auditor, and that auditor would sign off its balance sheet. It had on its balance sheet loans receivable that were backed by warranties, and therefore that auditor showed that loan receivable as cash equivalent. But that warranty was in fact not given by a third-party bank. That warranty was given by the top holding company, Steinhoff International. So from that auditor's perspective, they would view it on that level as cash equivalents. But what should have happened is once it gets to the top level where we would have consolidated the numbers, if it was a single set of auditors, and it does not necessarily have to be Deloitte, but let's pick one of the larger ones, they would have known that that warranty was given by the top company, and therefore on consolidation it should be removed and reversed because it's not valid from a group perspective and therefore it's not cash equivalents. Now that's just one example where having had a single set of auditors, in my view, would have certainly decreased the risk of what happened at Steinhoff. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Now we had Nati, David, preferably people who haven't spoken yet, Tandy, if you don't mind. Okay. Mkoleko. Okay. Yes, my friend, you from Freedom Front. Yeah, your name I've forgotten, I apologize. Anton, eh? Yeah, we spoke, I remember. Tandi, Mr. The two DA members, in whatever order, maybe Mr. Lees first this time, who knows, okay, over to, and can I please make one point now before you speak? The minister used to be an ordinary member of parliament a long, long time ago, and she knows the decorum in the committee. Yeah. Now, the thing is that she's disturbing Tandi, right? Hang on. And I feel that, you know, Minister, to disturb Tandi when she disturbs everybody else is both a good thing and a bad thing. But I'll leave it to you. Right, over then to Nafi.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I think for me, the input by Mr. Lekhranje, brief as it is, I think it's the crux of the matter. That's the most important part. Now, the problem I had with the earlier input, I'll tell you what it was. It sounded like a board report back meeting, right? And did not zoom into the specific matters. For instance, I'm certain that I can speak for almost every public representative here. We have absolutely no business whether Steinhoff exists or doesn't exist, whether it makes profit or doesn't make profit. I'm making an example. However, we have an interest around two critical issues, and that is what happened and what are the institutional governance issues, corporate governance issues that can also be derived as lessons, you know, for ourselves. And I think related to that is whether or not are there any shortcomings, loopholes, and whatsoever with regards to our regulatory framework. And that's why, for me, listening to regulatory bodies will also be important, but it would have made much more sense to listen to them in reference to what has clearly been identified as a corporate governance kind of weaknesses and whatever and so on. Now, my suggestion, I don't know whether we can still somewhat rescue this particular exercise in one form or the other, is that there has got to be quite a serious effort that is put into the whole question of unpacking the what happened part. Yeah? And in that, clearly identify the corporate governance issues and regulatory issues and so forth. And that we be exposed to that as members of parliament, for an example, and begin to unpack the SFI and whatever we would want to do with that and so forth, so that we can then effectively guide the process, amongst other things. And I think the second question is, what happened to pension funds? What happened to investments? You know, sitting on the outside as an ordinary person, for instance, that's a key question. You know, a public servants, I'm not sure what the number is now, but at some point, and I would hope it still is the case, at some point they were estimated to be about 1.1 million. So if you're talking about a pension fund that affects a public servants of that number, for an example, so it's quite a serious chunk that you are talking about and so on. So that's besides the whole question of the investments and stuff like that. So I think, for me, that question is also quite important to be clarified. So what happened to the risk factors? The risk factors is the question of your investments as well as your pensions. So I just wanted to throw that one in the honorable chair. Thanks very much.
We're going to allow the speakers who haven't spoken latitude, right? And then after they speak the first time, everybody who speaks the second time or more will ask three questions as we lead up to 3 minutes. Secondly, some of the questions overlap with Steinhoff and not just Mr. Ben Lafranche, so you will also answer them, and Mr. Ben Lafranche, you're free to answer. Right. David?
No, thanks, Comrade Chair, and to other honorable members. Firstly, is to commend the three of you there. Comrade Chair, someone is misbehaving there. No, thanks, Chair. I wanted to say, firstly, we must commend this Parliament and yourselves in particular. Very important. You are the Parliament for the Republic of South Africa. Whether we are involved in private entity or public entities, we must be bothered what happens into our country because it has huge implications. Therefore, the appearance by Steynhoff is unprecedented but fundamental, very important. One of the things that is coming up, and thanks for the presentation by Ms. Elefrange, we are having a bigger scandal equivalent to the Enrons that happened. Because there must be an appreciation, Chair, that this had big impact. Sometimes you will never be able to put the figures. This team should understand that this thing had a reputational damage to our country in terms of our country's assets. They've never done the calculation in terms of the country's assets, including the industry itself. And remember, the rent took a dive. And a number of other people had invested here. There's actually a number of challenges we face. We are very lucky now that some, to a certain extent, Mr. Lefrange is saying what happened. And you could see that this was organized corruption of the highest order by private sector, like it happened with other entities in the world. I made the example of Enron. And by sheer luck, that the auditors, they refused to sign. They got caught. Because if they were not caught, and the explanation itself of the inflation of either the assets or the reporting in terms of the liquidity, it's just a pyramid scheme that has been used. And you could see it's a well-structured pyramid scheme. And at the center of the problems, you think you have ethical business people that have been succeeding over many years. But the reality is that, Comrade Chair, even the ethical business people are corruptible. This is corruption. And then let me come to the point, Comrade Chair. The issue of the assurance, because Mr. Lefrange speaks about that he is sitting at the holding company level. What are the balance and checks that you did put? Because if you are having a number of sets of auditors, there should be an assurance level that you have to deal with. And you can only rely on the question of the external auditors that had to give it to the board after the review. There should have been the internal system. What actually happens for a company that had so much of assets? And then lastly, Chair, the issues of private sector failures and potential failures from a regulatory point of view, why has this company, because of his huge impact, probably when the regulators come, to arrest the situation and stabilize and consider liquidation? Why this one is so unique? Because this is a very serious matter when you actually do regulation of this magnitude.
A very brief one. There's something that disturbed me, and I forgot to ask about this thing. How are you on suspension without any written notification? I mean, how possible is that? I mean, I just, either Mr. Lefrange or the chair and deputy can clarify that thing, because I've never heard of something like that.
Yeah, that also struck me. That's a Satawu, former general secretary. Former, I must say. Who's next? Okay, whoever is next, right? Who's the next? Yeah, we decided that Mkoleko, because he has... Andy, don't worry. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I've got two questions. I'm interested, Ms. Lakhanji, if you could just take us through the nature and circumstances of the audit. I would like you to expand on that, because it, for me, it stands out as a red flag. Because I think what we are interested here, as the chair of Scopol always says, what killed the patient? And So we're doing a post-mortem. So I think for me that audit function is very, very important, and in the manner in which it has been described, it causes great unease, does not sit well with me. So if you can just take us through the auditing structure internally and externally, and then what happened to the reports, particularly of internal audit and internal controls, because I would imagine escalation to boards and so on would warrant certain levels of responses, and whether any of the findings found themselves subjected to a response plan to say, right, here are the findings and this is how we're going to respond to them. So that's the first instance. I would just like for more detailed narration of what was the nature of auditing. I know you glossed over it, but I'd like it in more detail. Secondly, just to emphasize what has been asked by the Honorable Cleo, the nature and circumstances of this suspension. I think it's quite telling, and I think once explained, it will put a lot of things into perspective, because I'll just be interested in the due process that was followed and whether it is consistent with the law, and or is it consistent with ad hoc practices which are being effected now, because we can't deal with this ad hoc. It needs to form part and parcel of something which makes sense, and what makes sense is the law, and not a knee-jerk reaction which in the main seeks to appease us on this side to say action has been taken. We can't bask in the glory of illegal action even if it seeks to achieve an outcome which is favorable. Thanks, Chair.
That is particularly, but I think Tandi was next, right? And the two DA colleagues.
Thank you, Chair, I want to say to General Khan, I'm not very smart, but I suspect this gentleman is a fallback of the company. General Khan, I'm saying I suspect Mr. Lekhranzi is a fallback of Steinhoff. One day I'll explain myself why I suspect that. I'm not smart. It takes.
Are you saying fall guy?
Yeah, he's a fall guy. He's put under the bus. But one day I'll explain myself. I'm not so quick to think. I'll think, and then when I start to think, I'll explain myself. Yeah, I'm not very smart, so I take the time to think. Mr. Lekhranzi, you were dealing with analytical procedures. And part of the analytical procedures, I want to know whether the tools that you used also looked at share values. Was it part of the work of the Africa component to do that? And I'm going to make a U-turn, because the reason why I'm asking this, you cracked the gist by explaining how profit margins are determined and how rebates were used and loans provided. So General Khan, that's how I come to this thing, you see. There's rebates, there's loans provided, and this influences profit margins. And here's an Africa component, you see. So to me it cracks the gist. But because I'm not smart, I can't come to that conclusion. And it comes to the question as to why will a person who deals with analytical procedures only and not re-audit numbers get to be suspended? Why a person who only deals with analytical procedures and not re-audit numbers? Because here, the issue was in the profit margins and the numbers that were reported. So here's a person who only use analytical procedures to deal. That's why I asked, are you also determining share values? Now, once you answer that question, it will make me smarter, Chair. The rest, I will deal with them later when we re-ask questions. questions, because I will come to a question where I'm going to deal with trademarks.
Tandi, look, you've repeatedly said that you're slow and you can't think and all. Now, the entire committee has agreed to that, right? We moved a motion in that regard and seconded it. There's no need for you to... Is there anybody who disagrees with Tandi that she is very slow and can't think? Yeah, okay, good. The only problem, once you agree with that, is that's why she says she takes so long. When everybody else takes 3 minutes, she takes 30 minutes, comrade. So that's the argument. You can't have it both ways. If she's slow, Tandi's got special dispensation to speak for up to 30 minutes, Nati. Right, okay. But you don't, because you people claim you're bright. 3 minutes. For three questions.
Thank you, Chair. I wonder if you could tell us whether, looking back, you believe that Marcus Huister ever lied to you, misled you, or used you during your term as the CFO of Steinhoff. That's my first question. You did make reference to a person leading you to believe certain things about companies in the group. Did Marcus Huister, in your view, ever lie to you, mislead you, or do you think use you? That's the first question. The second question is, when, given the fact that there were red lights flashing in the system since at least 2015, when did you first become aware of the fraud in the Steinhoff group, and when you became aware of it, what did you do about it? That's the second question. The third question is, you chose your words very carefully and said that in your view, you never did anything deliberately wrong. That means that you, in my view, that you concede that in fact you did some things wrong. Looking back, what in your view did you do wrong? Thank you.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lafonde, I see that you did your articles with PwC, and then you worked for PwC after your articles as well, and now PwC is doing this investigation. So, what is your relationship with PwC as a result of your long association with them? And then David's asked you a question about Marcus Huister's relationship with you. What exactly is your relationship, or was your relationship with Marcus Huister, beyond the business parameters? I mean, given your background with PwC and your position, very senior position as the CFO, surely you weren't simply a bookkeeper consolidating financial statements for the group. Surely you had a responsibility to do some due diligence about the reports coming in from the subsidiary companies. You were, after all, the CFO. You were not the bookkeeper. And your position as CFO was the one on which investors in this group probably relied more than anything else. And yet you come here today and you imply that you were simply sitting in Johannesburg or Stellenbosch consolidating financial statements, and that was the extent of your responsibility. I find that very, very difficult to accept. When you say that these three areas of misstatement, malfeasance, whatever you like to call it, occurred. Are you saying to us that you only became aware of these once PwC were called in to do a full investigation? Or were you aware of some of this, at least, or an indication of this, prior to the expose in December 2017? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And then it's Mr. Shivambu then. Okay, there's nobody else. Okay.
No, thanks, Che. The,
Che, the agreement was that questions would be put and then they'd be immediately answered.
I thought. Mr. Ben Lagrange has been very precise. Whether we agree or disagree with him, frankly, it's the best input we've got in terms of clarity that we've had since January. I thought it'll come in with Steinhoff because they were sort of waffling. Shall we just finish this process? Okay, Mr. Shivambu, then Anton, is it? Anton, yes, my friend. Sorry about that.
No, thanks, Che. I want the directed question that should be responded to. So, does the former CEO think that one of the major shareholders, Christo Vizzi, was aware of the wrongdoing far much earlier than the time he cited when he came here to Parliament? And does he think that the chair of the Audit Committee, Steve Poison, was aware far much earlier or even complicit in the wrongdoing that led to the collapse of the company? And I'm raising this because these are people who are still playing a significant role in South Africa's economy and in very important institutions. So there are, of course, processes that we have to engage in terms of the consequences, because it cannot just be a talk show that speaks about things and there's no consequences whenever there's wrongdoing. So let us then establish that from the person who was inside. And what do you think was the real reason for your verbal suspension and procedural suspensions? What do you think were the circumstances that led to that from the company? Those are the directed questions that we need a response to. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for remembering me. Mr. Lagrange, thank you for your presentation. I would like to ask you a question, and also the other directors. You've outlined some blind spot or a big blind spot to us. I'd like to ask you if there were any other blind spots that you did not allude to today in the operations of the company. And given the Companies Act and the Financial Markets Act and any other legislative frameworks that you must be cognizant of, do you have any advice, so looking at this from a corrective measure, on how those pieces of legislation must be amended to make sure this doesn't ever happen again? And then thirdly, just to give us an insight from your point of view, given the fact that this company is a multinational company, and that an institutional failure of this company would contaminate systems all across the world or affect systems across the world, how we can actually, from a South African point of view, liaise with regulators internationally to make sure that multinational companies cannot fail in a spectacular manner like this. We might have other companies much larger than you in the future, a company like Apple or Google or whatever the case may be with huge caps, that could fail if we do not take corrective measures now and amend legislation within South Africa but also internationally in that regard. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, comrades. Well, Mr. Lagrange, I
I was actually pleased and surprised by your input, because it was straight and pointed. And I was wondering, I mean, the way you've just put it, do you in your own mind think that Steinhoff somehow needed PwC to be able to have that kind of global understanding of what the problems might be? Because up to now, we have not had anything closer to what you have said from Steinhoff three sessions later, which makes one wish that maybe if we had had you in January, and not even have had Steinhoff, it would have saved us a lot of time and some bit of focus. But I also don't understand, now that you're sitting there, do you think it was necessary for you to be subpoenaed to come and share this information with us?
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to everyone here who we do hope you will all be assisting us so that we're able to ensure our institutions, the financial ones especially, are more robust. It is in line with my colleague here, co-chairs, who referred to your long period of association with PwC, and also, as you put it, your integrity at the time that you worked in Steinhoff. You also told us that you headed up the Africa operation as well as co-chaired, it sounded like, or co-helped the operation in the United States. Now, given that situation, and given your background in the financial architecture of governance, because that is essentially what auditors are seized with, financial good governance, when did you yourself become aware that there was a strange smell in Steinhoff? And the reason I say this is because you pointed out in your own operations you were taken by surprise, if not shock, when you were, what is it, suspended without it being put in writing. It would seem then that your own knowledge and background would have immediately enabled you to share some of the challenges that had arisen at that point. And so I do question some of the veracity in what you have said. Although, like our chairperson here, the Honourable Karim, he has made it clear, we do appreciate the detail. But even in the detail, there are very serious omissions. So I'm unable to link the dots, you see, chairperson, in this. And the same thing is when PwC were finally called in, I may be wrong, it looks like December 2017. If indeed that is the case, and you yourself and others in finance were aware, something's not right. Why on earth were you still dealing with Deloitte? I believe they were there until the end of December. Now, IRBA may be able to tell me why you have to keep on an auditing company which you know lacks integrity. I would like to know from IRBA what clause forces you into such an unequal and unfair arrangement. Thank you.
Very quickly, you described a very complex, intricate structure, right? But what's so special about that? Because all international companies, in some form or another, have such intricacies, but they're not corrupt. So what happened here? Secondly, I think the committee would like, you see, I don't personally believe that because a person may or may not be or is suspected to have committed irregularities, that we shouldn't ask that person, hey, now that it's all happened, what do you think? You know, let's say now, for example, somebody's prosecuted for 10 years. And you go into the prison and ask them, hey, now you're here for 10 years, it's all over, the appropriate authorities have done so, not Parliament, found you guilty. Now we want to ask you, man, based on what's happened in your experience, you're here for 10 years now, can you tell us what really went wrong? You're serving your sentence. You can tell us what. And what do you think were the lacunae and the regulation that allowed you to get away? And what do you think we can do about it? Right? No harm in there. Now, I'm not implying you are personally, it's not my job. It's for the prosecuting and other authorities. So I'm not saying you're personally guilty. I don't have any evidence, personally. But what I'm saying is, I would like, and I think we would like, more about the causes and what can be seen to be the lacuna in the regulation or practices and what can be done to deter that from happening. Personally, and I think many others will agree, it's inherent in the free market system, some would argue. It's, you know, if you really want to stop Steinhoffs, some of us believe, you know, they're fundamentally different social system. But we are where we are, and we can do more to deter these things happening. So I don't think you can answer those questions necessarily now. What we are asking is maybe the members will agree that within a week or two you write to us and tell us more in a way that's consistent with your right to any fair hearing in any regulatory or investigative process. Next thing is, on the suspension, I think others have raised this. It is actually curious, to put it mildly. And Steinhoff must answer for that. Tandy suggests that maybe it's a fall guy they're looking for. Well, maybe it's true. I don't know. All I know is that experiences both in the public and private sector corruption is that people look for a fall guy. And I'm not saying you are the fall guy. I don't know. Other people are deeply questioning how you could not know. And that's also a question I want to ask at the same time. Then on the issue of Steinhoff, this committee up till now, though there's no reason why we should stick by, as we begin to understand more, we may change our views. Until now, our view is we're not interested in the, if I'm correct, our view has been, we're not interested in Steinhoff as a private sector company. The markets must decide whether you exist or you don't exist. What we are concerned, though, is about jobs and about pensions being rescued, not just the public sector employees, but elsewhere. So until now, our view has been that Steinhoff should, as far as possible, be rescued. Not because we like you, right? It's because we feel that the implications of what you're doing for the working class of this country, not just the public sector workers, and for the financial stability, and for investment and other reasons, it may be a case that we should, we've been arguing until now, you should be rescued. Not because we care about you, quite frankly. We're not talking about you as a company. Our concern is the workers. Our concern is the pensions. Our concern is the impact you're having, everybody's saying. So that has been our view, and I think it should be our view, that we don't want Steinhoff to go down. If you're a private company with no implications for anybody, especially low-income people and workers, we'd say, who cares? The markets must decide, right? Now, the other stunning thing, it's a stunning thing, actually, which I think everybody is saying in different ways, and Steinhoff must answer for this. How is it possible that in a mere 10 minutes, Mr. Ben LaFrancia has given us more insight, answered more precisely, without, and he's very vulnerable, right, with other possible actions outside the parliamentary system. How can he do that in a mere 10 minutes? And you've been wriggling here. We understood the first time. It's now the third time. We got more out of him in the 10 minutes. In 10 minutes, Mr. LaFrancia, you know. Finally, you know what, Mr. LaFrancia? Like others, while I value what you said, and it's giving a lot of us insights on what we can and couldn't do in terms of regulations and oversight, it is hard to believe that the way you're presenting it, that you were almost oblivious to what was happening. So I'm not saying that you personally have done anything wrong, but let's take, for example, I'm a board chair, right? And operational issues mean some senior manager is corrupt. Morally, I must step down. Although I did nothing. I took no money. I'm not even getting a salary. Morally, I have to step down as the board chair, right? Though I did nothing wrong. And I'm getting no money out of it. I'm using my spare time. So, morally, surely, let me put it in a more general, a senior manager who played the role you play, even if you're not personally complicit, you've done no wrong, morally, you are complicit. Would you agree with that as a general statement of people in your situation, not about you specifically, because I don't want to ask that question. I don't think it's appropriate for me to ask. It's for some authority that's appropriate to ask. Morally, you are complicit, surely, like I would be as a board chair in the circumstances I just set out. Do you agree or not? Forgot.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm going to go through the questions as it was asked to me. Obviously, if I missed anything, then I do apologise, and you must just please tell me so I can answer it. So first of all, touching on my suspension without written notice. So what has happened actually is in January this year, we realised that the company will not gain credibility with third-party lenders if I remain the CFO of the company. So I stepped down as CFO in January this year. I did not want to walk away, and I did want to offer my assistance and relationships within the wider group to the new management team in order to assist them to get through this process of immediate need for liquidity, as well as then the PwC investigation and also some other projects like the restructuring of the automotive group, and also assisting them with historical corporate memory and information regarding certain litigations they face. I then concluded a fixed-term agreement with the company, committing myself till end of December in order to go to the office every day and assist them with these processes or whatever they need where I can be of assistance. I think Mr. Dupree described it quite well, and Ms. Sonna as well, in terms of the pressure points having been the third-party funders, actually, and that takes a hell of a lot of time. It sounds very simple to do, but it is really something where one morning you think you've got something, and then the same morning, a couple of hours later, it feels like the place is burning and someone wants to pull the plug. So that took them 24 hours a day to really attend to these matters, to get the lock-up agreement agreed with all the party lenders. Once that has happened, I had on my desk one or two projects still left, and then I approached Mr. Dupree and I actually gave them notice to tell them, listen, I'm going to give you my three-month notice period as per my fixed-term employment agreement, and they accepted that notice period, so I would have in any case left the company end of September, just because I think my usefulness to assist them was served, and I couldn't add that much more value, and then I was actually suspended within my notice period. I think the company just, and they must answer for themselves, just haven't had time yet to put it in writing to me. That's the way I view it, at least. Then there was a question on what happened to the pension funds. I'm not 100% sure I understand the detail of the question, but the difficulties, and that's what makes this event such a sad event in our history, is that the pension funds have lost money up to the way the share price is today. The company needs to focus on a restructure, and then the debt is still there, and the honourable member mentioned it earlier that there's a huge amount of debt that's still there, and that debt will in all likelihood, and this is my view personally and not that of the companies, would have to involve a subsequent restructure again, because the debt needs to be repaid in some sort of way. So in my mind, I do believe that the losses that the pension funds took up to date will, in all likelihood, be permanent losses and not necessarily temporary losses. Certainly, in my mind, I cannot see that the share price would go back to the levels it were before what happened in December. And you can see that from the numbers that Steinhoff released. If you look at that in detail and analyze that, then you can see that those levels of prices is not possible. Then on the question of assurances and internal systems, I think it's important to note that each of the boards I refer to, and I'm really not trying to sound as if I abstain my responsibility and give it over to boards below me. It's a matter of detection and being able to see something is wrong or not. Now, I place reliance on boards approving numbers. So the way it will work is 4 times a year there will be a board getting together on a subsidiary level. Again, if you take that slide that I've got there, take the French business called Conforama Group. They would get together. At that board meeting, there would be local management. There would be non-executives from the shareholder level as well. And those people would sit and they would go through the numbers and scrutinize it at that level. And at that level, they would ask management questions on the numbers, asking them, what's this, what happened here, what was the impact of a weak sales period, etc., etc. Once that board meeting is finished, there's the minutes of the meeting, as well as then that board would enter into an audit committee session where at the audit committee the numbers will be approved and recommended to the board for their stamp. And once all of that is done, it flows up in the chain. What I meant with analytical procedures is certainly not that I'm sitting at the head office, and apologies maybe for making it sound like that, and I do the bookkeeping. I don't even know how to do the computer program that runs the books. I've got a team of people who would do that for me, and then they would present me with the detailed information whereby we would run ratios, so it's ratio analysis, to look at covenants, to look at debt-equity ratios, to look at margins, to look at margin evolvement. So just to make sure and double-check if a business unit did submit a margin of a 7% EBIT margin, that it's now not suddenly 10% or 4%. If that is the case, then we would go back to the division of Conforama and tell them, listen, you've now submitted this pack, but historically your margin is always between 7 and 8%. Now it's 9. What's going on? And then we would engage in further discussions. But it's not a matter of a re-audit. So that's what I meant with the analytical procedure. So it is actually detailed work, but it's not re-auditing numbers and going, for example, to the Steinhoff Europe entity, telling them, you are showing now a balance here, I want to see the contract itself, because I relied on auditors asking the question, where's the contract, is it there, is there an invoice for that flow? In addition to the assurances, I think it's also important to note that there was an internal audit function. The internal audit function was either conducted by people within the Steinhoff Group, so therefore in-house internal audit. And then there's also, I almost said outsourced internal audit. In some of these places on the slide that I made for you, and remember again to Mr. De Pree's point from earlier, this is now a very simplistic look at the group. It is way more complicated. If you look at the group structure in totality, there's hundreds and hundreds of companies involved. And that is also what is making the process of getting through the audit and getting individual entities signed off so extremely challenging and time-consuming. But if you look at these components that I've summarized for you here, there would also be internal audit involved in each one of them, either by in-house teams or by people externally engaged. Those internal auditors would look at internal controls and the normal stuff that internal audit would look, and those reports would get tabled in front of the Steinhoff International Holdings NV Internal Audit Committee, external audit committee, and once a year there would be a meeting on control reports where each one of these countries' reports is scrutinized by that committee and worked through. I think what also happened here is that the internal auditor that was appointed to look at the Steinhoff Europe segment was again a small firm of internal auditors. It wasn't an in-house function or Deloitte or KPMG or PwC function. Then maybe getting further into the audit structure, the internal and external audit. So if you look at that slide, there would be component auditors, as I mentioned earlier. They would do the external audit for the individual businesses at the bottom. And then there would also be the main auditors being Deloitte. But remember that Deloitte was also the component auditor for some of these divisions. So, for example, if you now take the automotive business in Steinhoff Africa, Deloitte would be the auditor for that business as a component auditor. and then that information would flow to Steinhoff International, at the end be consolidated there, and Deloitte would sign off on the Steinhoff International accounts. What had happened in Steinhoff Europe Argia, where the most material amounts of what PwC is looking at, to my knowledge, is actually vested, is there was a small audit firm looking at that business unit called Commercial Trojan, CT, which is a small German firm that Mr. Dupree referred to. And they did the audit there and then submitted that audit back up a level. Deloitte then reviewed, because they were not Deloitte itself that submitted the component audit, but it's a placing reliance from Deloitte on the work of another auditor. They had to review the working files of CT and also had to review the working papers to the extent that they deemed it necessary of CT, and also do a test on the credentials and credibility of CT. So those control reports that I talk about, they would be tabled at the Steinhoff International Holdings Audit Committee, of which Mr. Steve Boyson is the chairperson, and that audit committee would scrutinize all of them and then give action lists through to management to attend or rectify or correct. So for example, if in Australia there was an issue where one area would have excessive stock theft, then it would be tabled at that meeting through the internal audit report from Australia, and in all likelihood the supervisory board would ask us what the amounts are. If it is material, what have we done to rectify it, or is it a people issue, have you replaced the people? So it's a very operational control report that gets discussed there and tabled like in other corporates. There was a question on if my suspension is legal or not. I think I've explained it earlier. It's not a matter of being in dispute with Steinhoff on the suspension. My nature of my assistance there was, in any case, one that was only going to be till December, and I shortened it from my side till September, and the company then suspended it within my notice period. On the analytical procedures, Honourable Member, I'm not sure if I've answered you enough on that. You did ask specifically if we... And you asked specifically about share values.
Is what a member saying? There's some rumblings.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Can we, as a matter of fact, call this a suspension? I'm just worried about that phrasing. I think it just needs to be looked at again, because if it's put as suspension and under the circumstances which has been described, raises whole other questions. And
Nati, very quickly.
No, very quickly. It's not a suspension. In fact, it's the... They might have opted for, you know, the first chapter in the Labour Relations Act, for an example, to therefore terminate the contract of employment. I think essentially that's what it is. So it's something that may have got to be clarified, but certainly I'll
come back to that.
But not suspension.
That's the former DG of the Labour Department. To let everybody know in what capacity you are speaking. Different people.
Yeah.
No problem. Over to you, Mr. Ben Lakranj. And can we just finish now, because we're running out of time? Precise answers. Have you got more answers, please? There are a lot of questions asked that you haven't answered. Quickly, yeah?
Yes, Honourable Chair. Yeah, just on the share value question, so we needed the analytical procedures. We would not look at share value. So what we did is we would look at balance sheet ratios, capability to repay debt, and not necessarily look at the share price itself, because that is not something we determine. It's something the market determines. I was asking back, looking back, if Marcus used the lied or used or misled me. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want to venture onto dangerous terrain, but I do believe that there was a limited sharing of information from Mr. Huister to myself. I didn't deliberately use the word deliberately wrong. I don't believe I did anything wrong. I became aware of the fraud over the weekend of 2 December 2017, when I was called in the Sunday evening by the Audit Committee, At that meeting, I was for the first time given a Deloitte report, and for the first time, the audit committee asked me to comment on the Deloitte report. I was shocked at what was in the report, and I then told him, listen, I can't have a comment. We need to wait for the CEO, who was then on a plane to arrive back in South Africa, because he must comment on the bulk of the items in the report. He then landed the Monday morning after that weekend, and he never showed up for the audit committee, and then, then I knew something's wrong. I've got a relationship with all the audit firms in the country. The fact that I did my articles at PwC, I don't even know the people there from my article days anymore, so there's really no concern from anyone's side in terms of my relationship with PwC. My relationship with Marcus Huster was only a relationship of being business colleagues, so we were not friends or socialized outside of a business environment. I have answered the bookkeeping part. Yeah, on the three buckets, again, apologies if I'm making it too simple. The information the company has to deal with is way more complex than just putting it in three buckets, but I thought for the purposes of my discussion with the committees, it just goes easier if we can identify and talk through it. But on the three buckets, on the question if I only became aware of it when PwC issued their view, these buckets were in fact raised by Deloitte and not by PwC. PwC is currently in a process where they took the Deloitte information and they have gone wider than the Deloitte report in terms of scope, because they've got unlimited scope, but they are getting proof for the stuff in the Deloitte report that Deloitte flagged to the board and that I was shared with me that weekend of 2 December. I personally do not think that, I do think the company needs PwC. It is a huge task to go through all the information, and I think the company and specifically the chairperson of the company is on a drive to get anyone that was involved or responsible to put their case on record and then from there to take it further. And to do that, you need proof. So it's not something the company has got resources or even skills to do themselves. To my knowledge, I was not, I really do not think Christa Visser was aware of any wrongdoing, and I also do not think Steve Boyson was aware of any wrongdoing. We've spoken enough about the suspension. Yeah, on the other blind spots and advising on how legislation can be amended in order to fix it and in the multinational and cross-border situation, I think all three of those questions I'm going to put into one answer since we are pressed for time. If you think through it, I've already mentioned earlier that I do think there needs to be some thought put into the principle of why would a multinational large group be allowed to use smaller audit firms to audit components or even holding companies within those structures. So in hindsight, if I look back now, that is one of the ways in which this was not picked up for several years, even before my appointment as CFO in 2013. So I do think that needs to be addressed in a way, but it must be a responsible way where it's not affecting small audit firms again, because that's the counter to it. But I do think one needs a more sensible approach, maybe forcing multinationals to say, even per country, you must have one set of auditors. And you can't have different ones in Germany and different ones in other countries. Then on systems across the world, I think one other thing that the JSE also mentioned in some of their press that I read that must be addressed is how do you regulate dual-listed entities? So currently the way the JSE works is they regulate it in terms of the Frankfurt rules, because the primary listing is in Frankfurt and the secondary one is in Johannesburg. So that might be something to consider on how to work rather to have dual-listed companies also comply with the JSE regulations, which regulations, in fact, is on a world standard if you compare it to the one I know now being Frankfurt. I think in terms of getting all systems across the world to talk to each other, and the Honourable Chairperson also mentioned it earlier, I don't think you can really prevent the risk or take it away completely of someone being out there trying to manipulate the numbers. if someone wants to do it and they've got the means or the system to hide it, they will be able to do it in some sort of way. So I don't think you can completely take away that risk, but I do think there are ways to mitigate and decrease it. Personally, I think the Companies Act is still something that corporates are grappling with, and even the legal profession. So I'm not suggesting the answer will lie in the Company Act, but I do believe a single set of auditors could have prevented what we saw here at Stein. On the subpoena that was issued, I'm not going to make it a long story, but I do want to comment on it. I'm very glad that the chairperson did ask the question. I was from the start willing to appear in front of this committees, and I had the date of the 22nd of August in my diary, and that date was agreed with my attorney. The date was then amended to today's date, but only with contact with the company and not with myself. And we then told Parliament that we won't be able to attend today, and can they give us another date? Not changing my intention to appear in front of the committee, I'm just finding a suitable date for my attorney. Fortunately, in appearing now, I was able to get the advocate to change his diary to attend with me. And my attorney can't be here, so I've answered the PwC Association. On the help with Africa and the USA, it's important that help is quite intensive, so it is really looking after the asset, making decisions on capital. It's not just, you know, hanging around in the office waiting for one of these divisions to give you a phone call. So it was a really operational involvement in all the business units in Africa, as well as the USA, so apologies if that didn't come out properly earlier. Then someone mentioned that I mentioned I was surprised or shocked when I was suspended. That was not my words that I used. And then there was a question, when did I become aware of the smell? Again, to my point of earlier, there were lots of press last year. In 2015, press started negative press about Steinhoff. The 2015 matter resolved around the German tax information that was raided from the offices. At that point in time, I was shocked that it happened to Steinhoff, but we then immediately appointed through the, at that point in time, it was still the independent directors of the board because it was a South African entity then, appointed specialists in Germany to assist us in evaluating the merits of these tax matters that was raised by the German authorities. And those merits were reported back to the board on a very, very regular basis. I also got a lot of comfort from my verbal engagement with the CEO on these matters, so that really didn't raise the red flag for me. And I also got comfort by the fact that even though the CEO was also being investigated in the German matters, that the reporting of these specialists' opinions is not going via the CEO, but went actually via the board itself. So that gave me the additional comfort that I can rely on those reports. Subsequent to that, in 2017 specifically, we received a lot of negative press. You would have recalled things like Bloomberg reports, like the Viceroy report, although that hit the scene only after the events of the 6th of December. But there were lots of negative press on certain structures and transactions. I really believe that there was misinformation planted by our JV partner, with whom we had a huge legal battle on in two countries for large amounts. And we answered through our investor relations team and with the assistance of the CFO in Europe and the CEO of the group, answered all these press queries to the extent where I felt it was plausible and I could believe the answers that were given. I was really taken by surprise when I received the Deloitte report on the 2nd of December, setting out specific transactions resulting in the inflation of income and the inflated balance sheets. There was a question asked why Deloitte is still here. I'm going to leave that to the company maybe to answer, if it's okay, Mr. Chair. Honourable Chairman, I take note of the writ to the members, and I will do that and send it through. Then there was a question on... that it seems that I was oblivious to what was happening, and also that I had to step down morally of people in my situation, not referring to me specifically. What I did do in January is I did step down as the CFO of Steinhoff due to the moral implication, and the moral implication did not resonate around guilt or not being guilty, etc., but it was much more of giving the new team the possibility to speak to creditors, people who were so angry at Steinhoff. For them to see my face, they wanted to hit it. So just to give them the chance to have that credibility, I therefore stepped down from that position. I hope that addresses the bulk of the questions.
Okay, and you will, within 2 weeks or so, insofar as you can, give us more of a sense of the causes along the concrete lines you've done, the lacuna and the legislation in your view, what can be done to address it. Now, there are follow-up questions. Yeah, there's a proposal that the three chairs would like to offer. We're at 13:00, or just past that. In fact, it's 13:15 almost. So we've got 15 more minutes, because the people out there, the services, service workers, they have their own agenda. So we must close at 13:30. So what I'm suggesting is that we hand over to Steinhoff now, or we are suggesting, if I'm correct, and it was to respond to the questions that have arisen in this round to Mr. Benlach, like why did you dispense with his services in the way you did, etc.? Why is there such a big gap between the way you answer and he answers, and so on? And then what we do is see how many minutes we got left, and then we move to this question-answer thing now, up to three questions answer, up till 13:30, and then I would like, Vilma, if you disagree, just press the button and speak, right? What we are three suggesting is that we can stay till maybe, well, the last bus goes at 20:00 today, not a problem. And if need be, we can call people back. But what we would like is to get insights from the regulators. What are they up to? And then come back to Steinhoff and now, and Mr. Benlach Ranjit with the question-answer thing. You ask three questions, they answer. Question, answer. But what do people feel now? Who disagrees and why? Yeah, Mr. Mania.
Chair, my view is that questions have been put, some questions have been replied to, some haven't. But to the extent that they follow up questions, they should be put to Steinhoff and to Mr. Benlach Ranjit now, and we should get our answers no matter how long it takes. Once we have our answers, I think we should then move to the regulators.
Like, even if we go that course, we should still ask questions at the end, because there may be things we pick up from the regulators. For example, Hawks might say, we haven't met Ms. Son. Then we've got to ask Ms. Son. It's fair. It's a parliamentary process. Maybe if there are people monitoring it, your investors and all that, they have a right to say, no, that's not true. I met you at the Wimpy Bar, remember? Down the road. So we have to give them the right to reply. So, are we going the Mania route or the chairperson's proposal route? Vilma, you want to quickly say something?
Chairperson, I do have questions. I will hold the thing for later.
Okay, now we're not going to vote on this. What do people feel? You want to go the Mania route? Mania route? Okay, fine. If that's what the majority wants. Good? Right. So what we're going to do is break for lunch. We'll come back and continue with Steinhoff. We're not going to disorganize the workers here. So 13:30 to 14:30. We can make it 13:30 to 14:15. How about that? Nyami, you think you can have a full lunch in 45 minutes? Oh, okay. Nyami can do it. We all can do it. Good. No, hang on. We are here now. We are here now because it's 13:15. Can people please use their watches? Or if you don't know, your cell phone has got a clock, right? Right. Over then to you.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. Okay. There was a comment earlier about the number of lawyers, and I realized that we didn't explain who is here from Steinhoff and why they are here. We did not have and take that opportunity at the very beginning. I am here as a representative of the Supervisory Board, as the Chair of the Supervisory Board, and have an oversight function. Louis Dupria is here as a member of the Management Board that takes care of the day-to-day operations of the company. As I've explained before, in an NB structure, those are very specific functions that are prescribed that the two boards follow, and that is why he and I are both here today. Behind me is Robert Dryman, who is with Worksmans, and Robert Dryman sits between the company and PwC. So anything that occurs here today that is relevant to the PwC process, Robert has to be here for that process. To my right behind me is Terrell Murray. and Terrell is in charge of communications of the company. So to the extent that there is anything that occurs here that needs to be communicated on behalf of the company externally, Tyrell is here to be able to manage that. So when I answer specifically from my oversight position, and I give an opportunity to Louis Dupria to see whether there's any further detail that he should add from his day-to-day perspective. I think the first and important point to make is that the members of the group that are currently involved with the group stepped into the situation in December to assist with the crisis. That's why we are here. I think also that the difference I experience here today is that I am sitting here as a representative of the company in all its functions, not simply, I think that the difference perhaps between my position and a position like the one that Mr. Lagrangi represents is currently he's representing his position, and I think that's an important distinction because it does put certain strictures around what I need to do and the responsibility I need to maintain in order to follow this process all the way through to its conclusion. We have said before, and I think the challenge is that the PwC process, the most important thing that they need to uncover, we've mentioned the two important things. The one is to get us to the financial results because of the number of stakeholders we're looking after, and secondly, to provide evidence so that we can follow through on the cases. When that evidence is produced, it is handed over to the relevant authorities. That we have to do. Our case then is ongoing. It's not complete. We then have to go back to PwC and continue to uncover, work through all the companies, understand who was involved, and any of those processes that I reveal to too much of an extent puts us in a situation that we cannot follow through on that process. But the two things that I can say is that we are committed to the process and we will ensure that it is overseen. The second thing is that the company, me, myself, and all the other directors have made themselves subject to that investigation. So we have not said that being in these positions mean that we are now exempt from that process. The entire process is subject to their purview. So I just wanted to make those comments because there was a question with regards to our oversight and why we answer in the way we do. There's a very, very different set of circumstances that relate to the two entities representing or here today that you've just heard from. In terms of the details of the suspension and so on, I think I must hand that over to Louis to give some insight as far as that goes.
Thank you, Heather. Maybe just I think there are three issues that I would like to comment on from the questions that were put to Mr. Lagrangi. Is the first, maybe to touch on a point that Heather made towards the end about governance and oversight, is that the PwC investigation is conducted via Worksvince. However, obviously they are consultants and they have to report to someone and take their instructions from someone. Now that is the supervisory board. But to ensure that the supervisory board remains independent in that sense, because as Heather correctly pointed out, there are members still on the board that was there on the 6th of December, the supervisory board has appointed a subcommittee that consists of three people, which is Mr. Peter Wacky, he's the deputy chair of the board, Moira Moses, and from a management board perspective, myself. So those are the three people that PwC engages with on a day-to-day basis. Secondly, dealing with Mr. Lagrangi's suspension, I think Mr. Lagrangi has answered that. I am not aware of that there's a dispute between the company and Mr. Lagrangi on that. Mr. Lagrangi did take part in a number of PwC interviews. I cannot offhand remember how many. He's fully cooperated with the PwC interviews and processes, and subsequent to a report that I referred earlier, is which I then discussed, I made the call to Mr. Lagrangi. His services were suspended in the notice period. So, and that was subsequent to a discussion and a decision by the supervisory board. And thirdly, dealing with Deloitte, is that Deloitte was appointed by the shareholders at the AGM at the recommendation of the company, and the reason that decision was made is because of something that Heather referred to, that it is of the utmost importance to get the financial statements out and to get new auditors in at this stage is just a task of impossibility. It was important to get these to within the timelines that we've already lined out. It's to get someone out in new would just made it impossible. And what I think that's a good point, thanks Heather, is that what was done at the insistence of the company is that the people who previously worked on this assignment was removed from the assignment and a fresh team from Deloitte, which is headed up by Mr. Johan Hopmans in the Amsterdam office, is the head audit partner on this matter.
All right, now moving into question answer, three questions maximum, within 3 minutes maximum. Over to questions to Mr. Ben Lekranje, so we finish off with that. We'll come back, Mr. Lekranje, you have to stay till the end, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, go for it, Mr. Mania Tandi. And Nati, you had your hand up. No. Okay, and Vilma will come in at the end as the chairs, right? We come in at the end.
Okay, Mr. Mania.
In your response, you said that in your view, and you chose your words carefully, Marcus Uister, that there was limited sharing of information. In what respect was there limited sharing of information? First question. Second question, your claim is that you first became aware of the fraud on the 2nd of December 2017. But you do also, in your response, make reference to the incident in Germany, which began, as if I recall, in about 2015. And you said that Marcus Uister gave you comfort, presumably about the investigation going on in Germany. Now, at the time, you were the group CFO. Did you yourself ever scrutinize what you referred to as the opinions produced by the specialists in Germany? Did you scrutinize those reports yourself? Did you immerse yourself in the details? And what additional measures did you put in place in your capacity as CFO to deal with what was going on in Germany? And then finally, I mean, given the fact that this is alleged to be one of the biggest corporate scandals in the history of South Africa, have you been interviewed formally by the Hawks or any other regulator in respect of this matter? Thank you.
Tandi?
Chair, I hope there was no gentleman agreement between what has happened between the suspension and so on, because I'm still not clear and I don't want to keep on harping on this question. But let me get to the point. Mr. Lekranje says that the board approves numbers. Surely if the board approves numbers, somebody submits the numbers to the board for approval. You see? And that is it's a great area. We're not sure who does that. But in the same vein, and Nikki will be interested at some point, I might not be hands-on on this, but you see, profit margins, much as they're not predetermined, assumptions are made. And sometimes it's on the basis of those assumptions that certain decisions can be taken that reflect the risk appetite of a company. I'm making that comment, Nikki, because at some point we might want to come to discuss this. But surely there's also a unit that detects if there's an inflation in numbers or whether the numbers are up. It just doesn't happen out of nowhere. And you can't tell me that there's a company of this magnitude that does not have a system that detects whether, in terms of the profit margins, there was an inflation or not. And furthermore, I will want to know whether this was reported to the JSC, which I suspect was not. Now, and I'm
read your three questions, but quickly, I'll summarize.
Then that's fine. I'll come back.
Yeah, we can give another three questions.
My main questions still remain with Steinhoff anyway.
We're coming to them. We're dealing with Ben Lekranje. Three questions, David. We agree with the approach.
No thanks, Comrade Chair. I just want to make a follow-up on what Mr. Lekhantshe said on how his scheme or the scheme of Steynhof worked, because it's a pyramid scheme. One, whether how these acquisitions of the new assets and shares, one, was it part of the strategy or policy, whether there was a policy decision. Because my understanding how the system works is like when you do the hedging, you have an asset that the real value probably, let's say, is 100 rand, and you acquire it maybe probably at 20 rands, and after some whatever time lapse, it then it changes. That's one. Secondly, what was the authorization process around the acquisition that led to the inflation? Remember you said that the parent company or the holding company, rather than to have the real financial capability, it will be the one that does the dummy, let me use it, the dummy borrowings, so that you can be able to get the other one. And then lastly, how does the authorization came about ultimately to say indeed, either the asset is now belonging to us, who makes that? Is it your treasury, whether is it your board? Because there are issues around those irregularities and accountability system, because we have to be able to see what is the center of some of the challenges like you painted. Without actually getting to issue that from a legal point of view, but from a systems point of view, policy point of view, and governance, because that's what you painted, how your scheme will work.
Very valuable questions, really. Mkuleko.
Thanks, Chair. Two questions. Mr. Hansch, you spoke about you receiving information, analysis, and so on. And that's for me where I have a problem. So in this whole time of analysis, you had a damaging moment only on the 2nd of December. What kind of analysis was being done? I take very cold comfort in the fact that this was an event and not a process. I think that in itself speaks to weaknesses of your own office and your own processes which you followed. And I really would like to be clarified as to how in good faith you can say it was only at that point, whereas all along you've been doing, you know, analysis and the broad strokes in which you have actually painted. Secondly, Chair, you place a lot of emphasis on the fact that the auditing by small companies is probably the alpha and omega of why this crisis actually happened. It seems to be the fallback position that had somebody bigger. Did you ever raise this in your capacity? Because you said it was a culture that had been there for a very long time. And so what was your intervention to address something which you are, you know, holding very dear now as to be the actual reason as to why this has happened? Unless it is, of course, something which arises out of hindsight. But I'm quite interested to know as to when that realization came about. And if it came about during the course of you doing your work, with whom did you raise it with, and what responses did you get, if you raised it at all?
Who's next for three questions each? Vilma?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Lekhantshe, for your presentation. My question to you, because you are responsible for the Africa Bloc, now, the PIC is where our public service pensions, they are tasked to invest the money, and they invested it in Steynhof. So what is your relationship with PIC as an investor and their concerns as well? When you raised your concerns, did you contact the PIC or did you communicate it with them? Now, secondly, you said that you do not see to the contracts. You don't see the contracts if there are any problems with contracts. The audit companies, the small companies, see to that. Did at any time the audit company, who, if they were concerned about a contract, did they inform you? You know, they must have seen they have a problem with the contract. Did they tell you about that? And if they did you do anything about it to prevent the problem from happening at that time? Thank you, Chair.
Just to say, we got a bit all right. It was a question answer immediately, right? It's my fault, actually. But it's interesting. Nobody says, hey, what are you guys up to, Chair? Sorry about that. But as it's happened, the questions are very precise. Mr. Lakhranje, answer them precisely. I apologize for that, but it just flowed because I think we're desperate to finish. It's already 1:30, but reply precisely. And if you don't, then each person, starting with the first person, you. So what we'll do now to accommodate the failure on my part, and I take responsibility, is you're going to answer, and if he's not happy, he's going to ask you. Not new questions, to answer the three questions he's asked, okay? Good. Right, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. So on the first question, Marcus used the limited sharing of information. So what I meant with that is there were certain relationships between him and third parties where that relationship was not disclosed to the company or myself. And had I known what that relationship, that it was actually one whereby he controlled the third party, I would have accounted for that transaction differently. When Marcus Huster gave me comfort on the investigation in Germany, yes, I did scrutinize the specialist report. It's a very complex matter. It's been ongoing now since 2015, but the reports I did scrutinize as it was tabled at the board, and if there was anything in them that I didn't understand, I would ask Mr. Huster for explanation on it, and he was always willing and able to give me whatever questions I have. The additional measures, that was actually a tax investigation on specific transactions relating to intellectual property that transpired over, I might be incorrect, but I think 3 years, three different years. So it was once-off transaction, so there wasn't actually corrective measures. It wasn't something that reoccurred that we had to correct. It was specifically the sale of intellectual property between entities within that European group. Just 1 second, I just want to consult quickly. Apologies, yes, I was interviewed by the FSB.
Conduct Authority, right? So he's answered the questions.
Yeah. I just want to confirm you have not been approached or interviewed by the Hawks.
No, I have not.
All right, General Khanna, you'll have to answer that. Why? But not now, when you appear. Yes, now it's Tandy's three questions.
Yeah,
precisely. Well, Tandy will then ask you a question for lasting 3.5 minutes. Okay? For our sake.
Honourable Chair, I've got all the questions that all the honourable members ask me, except when it gets to this honourable member, I seem to have missed the questions.
Okay, let's have to ask the questions quickly, and you answer immediately. Right. First question.
You see, Mr. Lagrange is avoiding my question. You see, Mr. Lagrange said that the board approved numbers. And I ask, who gave the numbers to the board to approve? It's not a very difficult question. I'll go to the others.
Who gave the numbers, Mr. Lakhranje?
So the numbers would be given by the financial reporting team. It would be put together and then presented in a board pack to members of the board.
No, Chair, he must not make me to ask him who does the financial reporting team report to.
Yeah, see, please answer the question.
He must not do that.
Fully.
The financial reporting team reports to me on a Steinhoff international level.
Next question.
The next question is about detection of inflated numbers. I ask whether is there a specific team, and when I ask if there's a specific team, I want to relate that team to him, so that I can understand when that team actually did inflate the numbers and did report to him. Because if he evades that question, you must remember Rule 168, because I'm going
okay,
to...
Okay, can you answer that question, please?
Can you just ask the question again? I really don't understand it.
Simply,
yeah, I said I'm not smart. I'm going to try to be... Chair, the profit margins were inflated. It's a fact. It's not an issue for discussion anymore. Now, I want to know whether there's a tool in the company that detects that. And if at all there is, to who does it report? And in this case, did they do that? And I even asked a further question whether the JSC was aware of that, because they deal with risk appetite.
Thank you, Honourable Member, I understand. So no, there would not be a tool to pick up that profit margins are inflated. The way the profit margin would work is if it's 7% the 1 year, and the next year there's growth in top line, then it will still stay around about a 7% level, so your margin would not point out that there's additional of these false income in the numbers, even though in euro terms, there will be more euros of false numbers. I'm not sure if that maybe explains it to you.
I'm sorry, Chair. You see, this is the gentleman who told me about an analytical procedure. But let me leave it. I'll come.
It'll be unfair to the other members because now
it's... That's what I'm saying. Let me leave it. I'll come to it.
Your last question.
He said that he does analytical procedure.
Right. Your last question? Oh, you're done. Okay.
David, ask me a question.
Mashlobo, can you please reply?
Just one question from the honourable member that I haven't answered yet. No, the JSE would not be able to know this.
Mr. Mashlobo asked you questions. Please answer.
On the authorisation process around acquisitions... So the way it would work is there's an investment committee that sits once a month consisting of the majority of CEOs of the companies that's disclosed on the slide to you. And these CEOs would then evaluate what to buy, what the price should be that it's bought at. And the majority of transactions would pass the investment committee in order for it to be implemented. However, where we already had a stake in a company, if you take the company owning the intellectual property that Mr. Dupriya referred to, earlier, we already owned a stake in that company of, if I recall, 40% or 45%, and therefore the subsequent acquisition or increase in stake would not go to the investment committee again because the original purpose to invest in it was already approved by the investment committee. To implement some of these increases in investments or investments, that would be done by the treasury function upon in instruction from the CEO or the CFO, depending on what transaction we are talking about. Did I answer all your questions?
Sorry,
Then?
No, thanks, Chair. There is one that is not answering. Remember, this was, you could see, it's a structured, purposeful. The issue of the holding company, knowing exactly the financial position, if you have you had an investment committee, plus I suppose the risk management, was it a policy? And was it a strategy where you intended to maximize profits or influence or expansion at any cost? That's what I want, at least the one around.
That's very fair, very fair. Please reply.
No, it was not the strategy of the company to inflate profits.
I mean, Comrade Chair, with your permission, remember you have a holding company, you have a board, we have these senior top executives that are there. One of the things that normally people do to maximize profit or influence or expansion, there is an authority. Which structure, I don't want names, I want the structure that gives authority to use the holding company in terms of using of the dummy acquisitions. The one around investment committee, I'm okay.
Very fair question. It's about systems and structures.
Yeah, a dummy company that was used a number of times in what you refer to, honourable member, as dummy transactions was the Steinhoff Europe company in Europe.
I'm okay. Good.
Right. Mr. Schlenkbach's questions, please, the last one.
No, I've already replied to all three questions. Oh, the next member. Yeah, on the receiving of information and the process and event, you must bear in mind that at least in my view, and the company can respond by themselves, but this practice commenced a number of years ago. So therefore, if there was false profit that was in the system that started way, way, way back, if you grow that false profit every year, no person, no auditor, no analyst will certainly just by looking at the numbers tell you, but here's something that changes suddenly this year, here's false income. Because it started so long ago and just every year it gets increased a little bit. It's not as if there's a huge jump in profits. So from my side, when I get the consolidated information, to your point which you raised saying you do not believe me, but when I get the consolidated information, I look at how are we doing against the budget that was approved by the supervisory board, and how are we doing against prior year, And year on year, there's no material movement where something jumps up with 10% that raises a flag for me to ask the question. It always increases just a little bit. And that is because, in my view, this practice was already going on a long, long time ago, or it started a long, long time ago. They're audited by small companies. Yes, it was actually raising my capacity as CFO. So we went out to marketplace to go on tender to give the full audit to people we invite on tender, and we only invited large firms to come to the tender. At the point in time when we wanted to award the tender, we had an internal meeting with the head of the audit committee, and the CEO convinced the head of the audit committee as well as myself that in certain places we should retain these small firms because of language barriers and the relationship they've got with the staff internally. And that's why we then awarded the audit to Deloitte, but we retained in smaller countries like Germany, Hungary, Austria, smaller audit firms.
Take in Vilma's questions now, co-chair.
Yeah, on the PIC relationship, so the PIC has always been the largest or second largest shareholder of Steinhoff, institutional shareholder. There's also a strategic relationship between Steinhoff and the PIC in terms of which we were trying to actually build a large focus between a corporate and the PIC on promoting black suppliers into the retail environment and also promoting black suppliers into using financial services products, not loans, but more technology products. And through this partnership, we decided, first of all, that we must allow the Lancaster Group to become a shareholder of Steinhoff. Lancaster is a company which is partly owned by the PIC and Jayendra Naidu, and that happened in 2016. We also then allowed the Lancaster Group to raise funding through PIC guarantees, if I understand the structure 100%, to become a shareholder in the Star Group upon the listing of Star in September 2017. But the whole purpose was actually to ask the PIC to put X amount on the table for Lancaster to come in as a shareholder of Star, and then Steinhoff would put the same amount on the table in order to promote the supplier development program and also assist Lancaster to increase its stake. So in short, the relationship with the PIC has always historically been a good one. When things happened, we did not inform the PIC immediately, but we did have meetings with the PIC subsequent to these events, or the company did. Then on the contracts of the small auditing firm, no, I was not informed that there's anything suspicious about the contracts with the companies that the small auditing firm audited.
Well, you can speak afterwards. You decide as a majority. It's 14:30. We'll be back. Alan, where are you? Or Teboho? Yeah. Where's the lunch? Outside. Okay. You have enough lunch there, I hope. Otherwise, can you please run and take what you can?